This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the show, TSN 1290, TSN 1290.ca. Lovely Monday morning, and a Techno Moby, I won't go. Techno's dead, don't you know? We're bringing it back on a Monday. That made no sense whatsoever. Bad start. We'll get better. Here on the Big Show, kicking off your Monday. A little snowy out, a little wintry out. December is here, and it's Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki kicking off your week. On back-to-back road wins for the Winnipeg Jets. Gentlemen, how was your weekend before we get into that? Because I have no clue what to say about this roster and this team.
A delightful weekend. And of course the Jets go out on the road and beat the Blues and the Blackhawks without Scheifele. You kidding me? On a back-to-back situation.
Can't figure them out.
Whip-de-doo.
No, you can figure them out. They just when you least expect something, that's when they pull it off. Just ridiculous, right? And that's the thing. It's one thing to go into these two places and Scheifele rips off 5 points in two games and your top line's flying, but this defensively inefficient, poor goaltending team comes out with two beauty defensive efforts against some of the best offensive teams in the NHL.
Yeah, it was something. And another great sports weekend is we could say that almost every weekend throughout the year. The Jets go on the road. They win two. Tiger Woods is back. It looks like he's back. We'll get the gentleman's thoughts on that. A couple of Manitoba rinks win the Canada Cup, qualify for the Roar of the Rings. But none bigger, I would say, none bigger, gentlemen, than the Winnipeg Jets going into St. Louis on Saturday night. And it's announced, after even taking the morning skate, that Mark Scheifele will not play against the St. Louis Blues, upper body injury. They win 3-2 in overtime. Little to Laine, Laine to Little. Little Laine, little finish. Whatever you want to call it. Big win. Get on the plane, go to Chicago. No Corey Crawford, no Jonathan Toews in the lineup. Still no Mark Scheifele for the Jets. They pull out an epic 2-1 win. In a fierce back-to-back contest where you saw plenty of scoring opportunities, a couple of breakaways, Blackhawks get a late third-period goal, but the Jets hold on to win on an Andrew Copp game winner. Saturday night, kind of what you would hope to see. Little to Laine, Laine to Little. Don't forget about the Thorburn goal, second of his season, 51st of his career, over 700 games played. Then they go to Chicago, and you see a little bit different things. Andrew Copp with the game winner after ringing one off the post. Connor Hellebuck with the win. The Jets come back to Winnipeg. They have a day off today. And they'll enjoy sitting 8th in the West, 28 points, 28 games played, 13-13-2. And some might say they are who they thought they were. Once again, 2 weeks later, they're 13-13-2. Same wins, same losses. But they're in 8th in the Western Conference. And it's just a bizarre, bizarre time. I conceded last night after the game, we may never know what this roster is going to be this year until the season's over, and that's okay, I guess.
And I think that's a very important distinction to make, that this year we don't know what this roster is going to be, right? Let them be inconsistent. They're super young and still molding and forming into themselves, and so what this year if we don't know what they're going to be? Let them surprise us. Let them disappoint us. It's going to be a ride. We knew that. All the warnings last year from Cheveldayoff and Maurice. We know damn well if you're a fan of hockey, you know damn well yourself that if you have a young team, there's going to be inherent ups and downs and a lack of consistency. But at times they're going to blow our minds away, and at times there'll be frustration. But this was a step. It was remarkable for them to, and we see it in hockey, guys. We see it more often to me than in any other sport. You take away one of the most important cogs of the team, Scheifele out, and somehow, some way, everybody steps it up a little bit. Blake Wheeler slides in the center like it's nothing, and everyone plays at a higher level. And all of a sudden, this team that's has holes and weaknesses and concerns in different areas of the ice, able to all come together. What blew me, even with the remarkable play of Laine throughout the weekend and the fantastic, you know, between the pipes, everything looks sound, guys. The whole Blake Wheeler thing to me was mind-blowing. I can't believe that first game against St. Louis, he parachutes in at center and goes 56.3% against one of the strongest teams in the NHL and looks as comfortable as possible playing that position. What a remarkable – I know Paul Maurice has come out and said that he's not going to stay there, but just imagine if they made the decision for him to stay there, what happens to you down the middle, and what a fantastic luxury to have to be able to put – Blake Wheeler in at center when your top line center is out for a little bit. Like, just stupid.
Yeah, the fact that's even an option is that just doesn't it doesn't add up, right? That shouldn't be possible for the Jets. But, you know, in his first year as captain of the team, it's almost laughable the stuff that he's had to go through and be kind of where he's had to situate himself in the lineup. I know Paul Maurice talked about it after the game, right? But people kind of forget that during this injury siege the team had, Wheeler was spending most of his time with Patan, with Ehlers. And I know Ehlers, like, that's not the worst thing in the world, but he always had at least one like a child with him. He was He was the team's babysitter for the first 15 games of the season, essentially. And now, you know, you throw onto his plate, hey, can you play center for us against St. Louis and Chicago? Yeah, no thing, boss. Like, it's just, it's wild. And the precedent he's set for the team. I mean, that's something you might not see it play out this year and manifest itself out this season, but, I mean, you talk about the youngsters getting an example shown to them. Is there anything better than what 26 has brought to the table this year?
Well, I'll float this out to you. I don't want to play here because I want to play top four on the right side. And then you ask Blake Wheeler to do absolutely anything, and he says yes constantly. Can't even get the yes out, he's doing it. And I think that speaks volumes when we're talking about this lineup, when we're talking about why isn't Laine here, why is Laine down there, why is Lowry over on the power play, why is this, why is that. There's a guy that, and this is the one thing I'll always say about Blake Wheeler, and there was, I remember a time when his leadership was questioned. Like, they need to blow up this core, they need to get rid of some guys. And I never understood that because Blake Wheeler was a guy standing there every February, literally swearing in a media scrum going, if I had the answer, I'd give it to you. We're just as frustrated as you, everybody else is. We can't figure it out. And my own game is inconsistent, and I can't figure it out. But there's nothing else you can do but keep just trying, moving forward, going, you know, the kind of guy that literally would do anything it takes to win. Nobody wants to win on this team more than Blake Wheeler. And we hear this all the time. Like, you have these young guys now, and how long is Little and Wheeler going to hang around? And how long are they going to be happy? And are they going to be happy if they're, you know, have these two scoring lines and these guys are maybe third liners or whatever? And Sancho, yes. Both Blake Wheeler and Brian Little want to win. That's all they want to do. And I believe they'll do anything to do it, whatever is asked of them. No question. I just thought it was ironic that, will you play center? Will you play with this rookie? Will you play with that rookie? Yeah, sure. No problem. And I'm not going to harp on Jacob Trouba because I think he has been fantastic since he's been back here. But this is a guy that was drafted, went to Boston, got traded to Atlanta, came to Winnipeg, re-signed here in Winnipeg, and is now playing out of position in an order to just, and is more excited than anyone I've ever seen on this team about these young guys and the potential for them to finally start winning.
And the only thing I'll say to that, sort of the two things, playing center is not a demotion. Like, what a fantastic opportunity, and to me, something to be really excited about if you're interested in playing that position. You know, so like, he'll do anything asked of him. Yeah, but sliding into that center spot, it's more of a, does he have the ability to do it? And I think a lot of people, and I know Paul Maurice has talked about it in the past, the possibility maybe him playing some center. We've seen him actually cover, right, for short periods of time in the past. So I don't give him credit for that, really, but I give him a boatload of credit for everything else across the board. And I will say this, though. I thought some of the criticism early on was warranted here, where he wasn't driving into the hard areas of the ice, and he would just kind of disappear and not seem as engaged as other times early during his tenure here in Winnipeg. And, you know, some of the criticism that was brought to him, you think of the Gary Lawless article, seemed to be impactful in some way. I mean, it was referenced by him, the incident in Dallas when he ran into the boards. That, to me, was the thing there, where the combination of his game becoming more consistent, like you said, JT, that he was searching for more consistency, that incident happened. And from that point forward, speaking out against Evander Kane, being aggressive in a positive way with the team, with the media, and really finding that level of consistency in his game. But and there is no doubt right now that the man is an absolute, some combination of animal and machine out there, and he is a remarkable joy to watch. And I dare say, and I say this with respect to Andrew Ladd, this is already, like this, he's doing out there. So there'd be some nights you'd watch and you'd go, you'd want Andrew Ladd to do something, like to make a statement on the ice with that C. And I think for a lot of people watching during Andrew Ladd's time that something seemed to be lacking. The quiet leader we heard all the time. I know Mark Shively raved about Ladd in the locker room, but sometimes on the ice, it just seemed like there was a lack of oomph in his game. That is not the case with Blake Wheeler since he's put the C in his chest. And even before that, the man is on a mission, and what a fantastic leader for this group.
Well, two things. I think, you know, be able to do it and capable to do it. That's why they asked him. Well, that's what they're asking Jacob Trouba to do. We think you're the guy that can go play top minutes on the other side. And the other thing is I just think he's more skilled than Andrew Ladd. I just think he can get it done. Like, whereas Andrew Ladd is no, this isn't disrespectful to his game or what he brought to it or as a leader, but Blake Wheeler has way more skill than Andrew Ladd does. So that's why he can actually, but you know, you bring up a good point because there's having the skill, there's wanting to be the guy, and then there's actually just doing it. You know what I mean? Like, you would have probably been around a number of athletes that there are those guys that have the skill to do it and for whatever reason get it done 2 out of every 5 times. There's those guys that don't have the skill and maybe get it done 1 out of every 5 times. And then those guys that have the skill, the want, and the desire, and they just
bring
get it done.
Every night, yeah.
And you know, he's been impressive. But back to the wins. Like, can you figure this team out? It's bizarre. It's like, you know, now they're back into the playoff picture. However, they have played 28 games. Calgary's played 28 games. And even Chicago has a game on hand in them with 35 points. But I said last week, I'll give it a week. And the week was Thursday because of the pushback of the World Cup to include the whole American Thanksgiving. So as of the American Thanksgiving, they were not in the postseason, even when you give them that week of the World Cup. However, now they're in eighth. They're 13-13-2, 28 points. And I guess, you know, I had a great discussion. I was watching the game Saturday with Hustler, and we had a great discussion about Paul Maurice. And we were talking about how people are questioning Paul Maurice as a coach. And I thought Huss brought up a good point. He goes, well, how do we know he's a good coach? Like, how do we know he's great? And I said, well, look at some of the teams he's got. I said, I don't know if he's a great coach. I think he's a good enough coach to get the most out of guys. That's what he seems to have done despite his record. He gets guys to do a bit more. And Hustler said, fine enough. And at the end of the discussion, we sort of just rested on the fact of, well, we don't know if he's a great coach, but we know he's not a bad coach. We just know he's a good coach. Like, is it good enough? Is he going to be one of the greats? You know, he's coached since he's 28 years old. So who knows? And that, I guess, is where Sunday's game, when I watched him beat the Blackhawks, is just where you sort of sit there and go, well, you know, this is a big year for Paul Maurice. His contract's up next season. We all know about the lame duck theory. Like, what happens from now till the end of the season, I think speaks volumes about what the future of Paul Maurice is. And I don't know what that is. Like, I don't know if they play well enough and don't get in the playoffs, is that enough?
Like, it's 500?
Yeah, like say what we see here all year right now, is that enough? They're young. You're seeing some really good things.
I sure think it is, man.
And then next, or is it, no, like, you have this young roster, you have to get in the playoffs, or is it, you know, what if you have a disastrous season? Is it just, well, no, these are young, look at all the injuries, blah, 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 and we're giving them 2 more years, and next year is the year where you really, like, it is interesting because what happens this year also puts pressure, takes pressure off Paul, but it also, like, something has to be done at the end of this year, and you look at this team and how they're going, they're showing some really bright signs. By the way, this is a big show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki.
If he's 500, I say there's no doubt he's re-signed.
Like an extension afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about the whole extension thing. It's just tough to say without seeing what happens, but it goes back to when we try and evaluate coaches. What does a coach do with the group that he's given? Right? A 500 record for Paul Maurice with a youthful Jets team with question marks in goal is different than a 500 record for the Dallas Stars or the Predators. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It's tough to say that he needs to get to this mark because this team, like, it depends on your expectations for the Jets. And to me, they are right now where I thought they'd be. You said eighth in the West right now. I mean, they got a bunch of games in hand. So let's be fair and say a bubble team.
Yeah,
and that's, I think, any reasonable person said they were a bubble team. Might squeak into the playoffs, might not make the playoffs. And if as long as you're at or exceeding expectations, there's no reason to get rid of the head coach then. And, I mean, this team could be below 500, and if the goaltending isn't any good, Paul Maurice doesn't coach the goaltenders. Like, you know, so it depends how the season plays out exactly. But if they end up, let's just say this continues on for the next 50 or so games where up and down play, you know, youth being youth, you see some great skill and excitement, but you see some head-scratching plays, of course you give Paul Maurice another chance next year, because I feel like next year is the real... I know some people don't term next year as a make the playoffs or else type of year. I kind of do, though. I kind of think next year is their, you know, let's see what this group really has.
See, but therein lies the question of what to do with Paul Maurice. I don't think it's a negative thing. It's just a legitimate question. So say everything's fine, playoffs or not playoffs, played hard, two games above 500, whatever. But so you give them the two-year extension, and then next year they're awful. Because that's why I say this is an important year, because this year is what it is. But say they continue this trend and it just doesn't, it's not going in the right way next year, then you've given them that, whatever, two-year extension.
How can they be awful next year, though?
Well, that's the question.
Like, only if they don't respond, right? And then you can them. Like,
you've probably given them two more years on top of next year by then.
But
like,
who envisions them not responding to them? That's the only way that they're horrible next year, to me, is if they just stop responding to the man, and I just don't see that in the cards. How can this group be horrible next year?
I wonder if there's some Oilers fans that are saying, well, you'd be surprised when you have expectations. You know what I mean? I get what you're saying.
I hate putting too much weight on what happened to the premier example for disappointment in the NHL. I mean, for Pete's sake, they set the bar at disappointment. I think a lot of time is wasted being fearful of becoming the Oilers, you know?
Yeah, but even like, say, the Florida Panthers, right? Everybody picked the Panthers as a – I know injuries are a bit of that, but right?
Yeah.
Like, did anybody think Gerard Gallant's going to be looking for, you know, getting an apartment in
Vegas?
Yeah,
and that's what I mean. Like, it's just if things go off the rails – like, the reason it's important isn't about so much as – I guess it is how they do. It's just that, like, you have to do something with them this summer. So if you give them the extension, I'm not opposed to that at all. I think that's great. But then if things don't go well and then the next year they start off poorly, then you've just given them a year and a half of pay that, you know, it's an interesting time for the team to be where they're at and where Paul's at in his contract. That's all I'm saying. Like, it's, we hear about that, and it was a great discussion with Hustler, and that's how we ended it. It's like, so we're all in agreement. Like, it's not a bad coach. I don't know if he's a great coach yet, but he's a good coach. Like, he's just a good coach. So far, we'll take a break. We got to talk some Tiger Woods, and we'll get back into the Jets as well. They win two big games on the road, come home to host Detroit on Tuesday, and we'll find out what these guys thought of Tiger's performance on the weekend next on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca.
This is The Big Show podcast on tsn1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki kicking off your week with you. And Tiger Woods returned to action on the weekend. Had an okay first day, better second day, and continued to cruise and cruise and cruise. Hideki Matsuyama was only 5 when he first saw Tiger Woods watching a videotape at the 97 Masters victory. And he went on to win the tournament, the Hero World Challenge, 18 golfers taking part. And he closed with two pars and a 1-over-73 and a two-shot victory. Woods himself was, I thought, very impressive, gentlemen. Your thoughts?
I wasn't impressed by him.
You were not? I wasn't.
The second round was awesome. You know, the early start of the first round was great, and the second round was fantastic. But the ups and the downs, like to finish the tournament 70-76 and to finish in front of only Russell Knox and Grillo, two guys I hardly even am familiar. I've heard of Grillo, I believe, for some reason. Knox, I don't think so.
Grillo was close in the last major of the year.
Yeah. So that, but that's like hardly at all, right? Like, but just his game, the ups and downs of it. No, I didn't expect him to come in here and conquer the world or anything like that. And I said I was just mostly full of hope. And I suppose that he was competitive, right, where he's sniffing around the guys for a good chunk after that second, after his second round 65. But, like, when I watch him, do I feel like he's going to be able to go out and capture another major? No, I don't feel that at any point in time. And just the up and down, like, that up and down is remarkable to me. And the way, like, again, the double bogey in 18, and it seems like in places where there's a toughness or an absoluteness of mentality that's needed, it's just not there for him. And the laugh and the smiling during the round, and I know it's kind of a relaxing, different sort of an atmosphere, but I just don't see the Tiger Woods that used to be, and I don't think we're ever going to see the Tiger Woods that used to be.
Woods made 24 birdies, which was the most of anyone during the week. He also made six double bogeys. Three of them was in his final round. The last one on the final hole, his third of the week on the 18th. So he struggled with that hole all week, save for one day. Gave him a 4-over-76, the highest score he's shot throughout the tournament, and he finished 15th in the 17-man field.
Sounds like a guy who hasn't played in 15 months.
That's what I thought.
You know, with all those doubles, I mean, it's funny, too, because if you would have said before the tournament started, Tiger finishes 15th, 14 off the pace, you'd be like, that's too bad. Tough weekend for Tiger. But he led the field in birdies after not picking up a golf club for 15 months. Like, that is so mind-blowing to me. And I actually feel better. This may be the first time since 2013 where I actually feel like Tiger at least can be competitive. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to win again, because it's one thing to make a ton of birdies, but when you get to the final round and if he's leading, there's going to be a ton of nerves and a ton of – it's mainly the battle's going to be between the ears.
Yep.
But the fact that he can make the shots – and his iron play was outstanding. Some of the shots he was making was – it didn't look like a guy that took that much time off. Plus, he's got the Scotty Cameron back in his bag, which, you know, like it's kind of a funny ha-ha thing, but – realistically, when he's putting like he does a lot of the times and making some of the birdies he did, like that, a bit of a comfort level with that is huge. You know, I just think he's going to get better and better here. Does he win again? Who knows? But for me, I know he could be competitive again. And I'll take that at 40.
That's a better question. Is he going to compete again? This age, all he's been through, it's been 15 months. I'll read you
his
quote.
Does that mean not embarrass himself?
Yes.
Well, what's embarrassing? Like, if he's on the tour and he has two top 10 finishes and the rest of the time he's in the top 50, I think that's a major victory.
Really, huh?
Well, look at what he's been through. Look at where he's come from, both on the course and off.
You're saying, so
like, if you can,
this next
if
calendar
you can get
year,
back
if
to
he
the
has two top 10 finishes,
if you can get back to
successful?
The PGA Tour and compete and be in some money, I think that's amazing, given his back surgeries, his knee surgeries, his off-course problems, his on-course issues. Like, I just think that to come back from that and compete, I think it's great. I'll read you his quote. "I need to play more tournaments. 0 in 15 months is not a lot, so this is one. I thought I made some good positive things happen this week. Made a lot of birdies, also made a lot of mistakes. That's something I can now clean up." His caddy, Joe LaCava, offered this perspective. "I wasn't going to compare him to the rest of the field. They've been playing all year, and they've been playing great. Honestly, my goal was to get him through five rounds on his feet. That was big." And that's what I think, too. Like, even if he finished 18th, I just think that if he played well, 24 birdies shows me he can still play. Now it's about getting consistent. And I don't think even now. I think like 2 months from now, after four more tournaments, then I would look for him to start getting more consistent. He hasn't golfed in 15 months, and he's coming off his third major back surgery, plus the knees, plus everything else. And all. I think that's – like unless he finished 18th and was 40 strokes off, then
like
I would go
birdies,
then
right?
I would go, oh, my goodness.
Boys, but I hope so, boys. The bottom line for me is it was really nice seeing the red shirt on Sunday. Well, as long as he's out there, I'm gonna take a great deal of pleasure just in that.
We talked about how golf needed Tiger Woods, but now there's so many good golfers that have all made names for themselves. I just think it makes golf better having him around. Having him around the Spieths and the Days and the Dustin Johnsons and the Roses to compete, like I just think it adds a whole new thing to the PGA Tour of interest. Right.
And I tell you what, if he does get like hardcore competitive, if he's there to battle for a major, look out for the ratings.
If he starts dating again, you mean? Gets back to – never mind. We'll continue with the Big Show and get back to the Jets. Two big wins on the road on the Big Show.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
More and more Manitobans affected by homelessness need something to eat and somewhere to sleep this holiday season. If you can help by making a cash or clothing donation to Slow Mission this holiday season, please call 204-956-4344 or visit salome.ca. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jim Tope, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, carrying you through your Monday morning. A lot of snow out there. Looks like Christmas is well on its way, or the holiday season. And winter, so to speak, because there's snow everywhere.
It's all melting. Yesterday it melted, man.
Let it melt, man.
There's not much snow out there at all.
No, it's all my steps, the sidewalk, all ice. I was.
You be careful,
Brandon. I was a few centimeters from wiping out, not making it here.
You got to use that salt.
If I fall down at 4:30, it's
you.
I'm not good enough.
Be careful. Anything could happen to Troy and I, but if you don't make it, this show will not run. He is the key. Jets win two big games, 3-2 in overtime in St. Louis, and of course 2-1 last night in Chicago. They now sit 8th in the Western Conference, 28 games played, 13-13-2. They host Detroit on Tuesday night. They have a day off today, and they host the New York Rangers on Thursday night. Then they go to Calgary Saturday night. Then they go to Edmonton Sunday. So identical week once again in the schedule. Two home games Tuesday, Thursday, then back-to-backs on the road, although the flight from Calgary to Edmonton will last about 20 whole minutes. But it'll be an interesting week once again for the Winnipeg Jets. Let's delve in to this Brian Little-Patrick Laine combination. That seemed to be all the talk on Saturday night and really into Sunday that I heard from people about how good that looked. And really, it's interesting because a lot has been said about where Patrick Laine plays and who he plays with and why is he not here, why is he there, why is he not doing this. In reality, I honestly think, watching this, I think Paul Maurice is trying to look at all aspects of it. Like, who has he played with that he hasn't looked good? I mean, he didn't look good on the road, and he was on the third line in that five-gamer that they didn't win much.
How about Kopp and Lowry? Didn't look great there.
Kopp and Lowry, okay.
Keep him away from the third line, please.
But, like, how good did that look now, Brian Little and Patrick Laine?
Look good, and don't forget about Ehlers still being out there with him.
Yes.
So it's
always forgotten Ehlers. Poor Nick Ehlers.
And the only reason, of course, this whole thing set up is because of Scheifele, but they looked fantastic. That game against St. Louis, boys, Patrick Laine, there's the one move on, Petrangelo, right? Like, he makes Petrangelo look like someone on a bottom half 5-6 team, 5-6 pairing. Like, he just freezes him. That move, and he damn near pulled it off for a goal, was unbelievable. And then, of course, the dish for the game winner is ridiculous as well, huh? Just completely freezing. Hutton is dead. He absolutely has to commit to playing the shot. And then for him to create a little bit of space with the puck and flip it over the way he did with his backhand, the man is just a marvel for us. And it's really hard to believe, isn't it, guys, that you think about how long he's going to be here for, and he's going to get better, right? Like, as each year goes by, he's going to get bigger, stronger, faster, all that sort of stuff. It's just amazing.
I got to correct you there, Troy. Kid. right?
Yeah, fair.
It's funny how basically once a game you have to remind yourself, oh wait, that's not a 27-year-old like Finnish monster man. It's an 18-year-old man child who's just kind of scratching the surface of what he might become. I mean, that played a little. Who actually had a nice finish there by Little on a tight angle, but once Laine makes a play like that, every opposing coach and every opposing goalie sees that and goes, oh, F.
Yeah.
Because you're, as a goalie, you're hopeless there. Like, you're telling me, you know, name your goaltender inside the central. You're going to play pass as Laine comes in on you?
Yeah.
Like, shut up. When he makes plays like that, that's when whoever he's with, and that's when Laine himself becomes unfairly unstoppable, because there's nothing you can do, and it's just kind of a reminder that as good as his shot is and as absolutely out of this world that he is at scoring goals, he's a damn good passer too, almost as good of a shooter as he is.
Well, I was impressed with the little pass to Laine for the second goal, and then in overtime the sauce backhand pass from Laine on the game winner. Like, it seemed to be, that was what excited where I was watching the game on Saturday, the whole group. First of all, the constant talk of, this is the one thing I've heard the most this year, we finally have a superstar. We finally have a bona fide superstar. We have that superstar. And then the next thing I kept hearing all that night was just like, those two passes and those two working together might be a new combination, might be the new way to go, might be to keep them going that way. Perreault, Wheeler, Stafford were the lines. Brian Little was centering, Patrick Laine and Nick Ehlers. Lowry, Kopp, Dano, and Bermistrov, Thorburn, and Tanev. But that combination looked like it could work very well too. And Brian Little now has 4 points in 4 games.
Yeah, he looks just it's really neat seeing some of these guys come back from either time missed or injury, and mostly injury in this day and age where guys, it used to take X number of games to get back in the swing of things. But now, and it must just be related to the level that training is at and what they're able to incorporate to mimic game. But they just, guys come back now and they just fly, they just fit in so seamlessly. It's unreal. It's going to be really neat as this team continues to get healthy here. You know, waiting maybe for Myers will be the next truly massive impact. I know Armia is still way down the road, but just they're coming into their own here, right, and getting healthy. And this team will continue to get stronger here. And can they? They got all kinds of games in hand, which really it's hard to measure just where exactly they are in the Central right now and within the playoff race because of the number of games in hand. But there's little doubt that this team is going to get stronger and stronger as the season progresses.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you had Trouba basically not miss a beat, and Brian Little's been the exact same way. And I think a big part of that is it sounds like they were overly cautious with him, because I think what you're seeing with Matty Perreault right now is maybe more of a traditional kind of return to action, where the reason Wheeler's playing center is because I don't think Perreault's fully healthy, and they don't want to expose him to playing down low and all the board battles and things like that. So you throw him out there on the wing for a couple of games to get his feet under him, and then, you know, hopefully this week we see Perreault make a bit more of an impact. But you just see why we for weeks had said, just wait till Little comes back. Just get to 500 until Little comes back. Because it's once you have Scheifele and Little as your 1-2, that's as good as it gets, I think, in the Central in terms of your top two centermen. Like, there's not a whole lot of teams that can boast that kind of impact down the middle.
Yeah, well, and let's talk to that last night then, because I thought the best line on the ice was Adam Lowry, Andrew Kopp, and Marco Dano last night in Chicago. And they were key in that victory, not just because Kopp got the game-winning goal, but I thought they were, like, rolling last night. That line looked really good.
And their numbers back what you're saying here, that they were the most effective line out there, and they did look really good. It's really... And there's another, like, we're talking about wait until Scheifele comes back and the whole down the middle strength, and with Perreault eventually, where's he going to settle in once everyone gets healthy? And remember, they started the season with him at the third line. Eventually, does Kopp become, like, the Kopp-Lowry-Dano thing, does that eventually become your fourth line? I'm watching this wondering. I just kind of wonder that once things settle in here. Last night, Kopp, Lowry, Dano played fantastically. And I tell you what, guys, it sort of added into that mix just because of the bottom six sort of thinking of it. Watching Tanev as well, to me, like, just the whole how night and day difference the bottom six is for the Winnipeg Jets compared to years past and the future that is held here for the Jets with that bottom six, the depth, the production, right? No longer dealing with guys with .11 career points per game sort of averages, but you're getting actual production here. It's fantastic stuff.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki with you.
It's going to be real interesting what they do when they get to full health, because basically this whole season, Paul Maurice has had that Lowry line, whatever iteration it's been in, as the team's third line. Like, it's always been that. I know fans probably don't agree with it, but he's always been, in terms of ice time, that line gets somewhere in and around 14, 15 minutes a game, which is what you see a third line get. So
he's using him as his primary or big-time shutdown guy.
So if that's the case, what do you do with a fourth line? You know what I mean? Like, which players do you have left that suit up for that? I mean, if you're going to go Lowry, Kopp, Dano for the next little bit here, I'm really intrigued to see how they try and maneuver, how Paul Maurice tries to maneuver his way around that, because Burmistrov's the easy player to come out once Scheifele gets back in. And then it gets kind of interesting, because like Troy said, Tanev's been real great, but in all reality, I think he's just a good fourth line forward for a team that kills penalties, and like, he's not good as
That's a good thing to have that good of a fourth line.
Yeah, you don't want him playing on your third line. That's not a knock on him. He's a 23, 24-year-old rookie, essentially, who can benefit your team in ways other than the score sheet. But I'm just intrigued to see how they try and play that out, and if maybe you look at Matty Perreault, who's coming off injury, throw him on the fourth line as a centerman, just kind of like a spark until he gets back to full strength, and then you try and maneuver your way out of that. But it's interesting, because your initial reaction is Lowry, Kopp, Dano, outstanding fourth line. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see Paul Maurice shifting from how this organization views Adam Lowry. For 3 years now, they've basically pegged him as this team's third-line centerman.
Yeah, and they are molding him. Like, we've talked about his play. I think he keeps getting better as the games roll along. I thought he was phenomenal last night, especially in the face-off circle. I got a kick out of the whole face-offs with everybody, too. Like, the linesman, my favorite line, drop the puck, it's not a magic show. Like, just the debates that were going on from both the Blackhawks and the Jets with the guy positioning and everything like that. But I think that they are, much like some of the players this year, they're just sort of going with it and letting it have its ups, have its downs, let it play out so he can continue to develop into that third line. That's what they want on the third line, is Adam Lowry taking faceoffs, being hard to play against, and getting in your face, being physical.
And Kempney never came back, right?
What's that?
After the hit, Kempney never came back, right?
No. Play.
Just crushed, like you're talking. Yeah. And what a fantastically sound hit that was, huh?
Yeah.
Jiminy Crickets.
So, and I just see that's what they're doing with him. Like, I think they're going to give him this entire year to sort of develop, figure it out, take the downs with the ups, like I said, ups with the downs too, and just let it go. And then again, I think that when this team gets healthy, you see Burmistrov and Thorburn being the healthy scratches like it was at the start of the year. And like it or not, Chris Thorburn had a great weekend, played well, contributed, blocked shots. He was great on the penalty kill. That penalty kill yesterday with two minutes to go, and Connor Hellebuck saying after the game he's never been more tired. They were under siege. I also, and this is just on a side note, got a kick out of when the whistle went and Chicago still fired the puck and it hit Thorburn. Mm-hmm. That was kind of funny to me. That's the old thing. Like, you could hear him go, what are you doing?
Well, he skated over right away.
Yeah. He's like, he's like, sorry, dude. I didn't hear the whistle. And I'm like, it was one of those, are you sorry? Or did you do that on purpose? But much more to delve into with the Winnipeg Jets. 3-2 overtime win in St. Louis and a big 2-1 win in Chicago last night on back-to-back road games. They return home to host Detroit tomorrow night. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little curling and get into a little NFL. Two Manitoba rinks capture the Canada Cup titles in Brandon over the weekend. We'll talk about that next on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westford, Brandon Ruwicki. Plenty more talk to come on the Jets' big weekend. Two wins on the road. They come back and host Detroit. Also going to talk some more Tiger Woods and some NHL news around the league as well. Plenty of hockey talk coming up. But congratulations to two Manitoba rinks. Brandon hosted the Canada Cup of Curling this past week, and Winnipeg's very own Jennifer Jones beat Rachel Holman 9-5 to win the women's title, and Reed Carruthers beat his former roommate Mark Nichols, who was skipping the Brad Gushue rink out of St. John's. Nichols and Reed Carruthers were roommates for 2 years when they were curling with Jeff Stoughton and winning a lot of stuff. Carruthers beats Nichols 8-5 Sunday to capture the Canada Cup. And what this does is get both teams qualified into the Roar of the Rings for the spiel that will decide who will go next December, who will go to the Olympic Games. So congratulations to both Manitoba rinks, and a great week out in Brandon, of course. But Manitoba continues to do great things on the curling scene. Two big wins, Canada Cup and Brandon.
Truly awesome. And just nothing at all slowing down Jen Jones. Boy, there's something special.
They continue to roll for years now. Don't call it a comeback. They've been here for years and years and years. So congratulations to them. The NFL yesterday, gentlemen, I thought there was a couple statement games. One was the Kansas City one. The other one was also Kansas City beating Atlanta on the road in Atlanta. And the other one was also Seattle beating Carolina. And not that I believe in Carolina and especially their defense this year, but 40 points at home and sort of that statement game of here we come. There are a lot of teams. And then Oakland comes from behind as well late in the game to beat Buffalo once again. That, to me, with no disrespect to the Giants and Washington and how the Eagles and the Cowboys have battled out the past couple of years, that division, in my mind, at least, the AFC West between the Raiders, the Chiefs, the Broncos, and the Chargers has become the division to watch. The Broncos won again yesterday. The Chargers lost at home to Tampa Bay. But this battle that's brewing, and this Thursday night game is going to be the Raiders and the Chiefs in KC at Arrowhead.
Is it really this Thursday?
This Thursday night, they go at it on Thursday night football. So by all means, join me at the Canadian Brewhouse. We'll have that and the Rangers-Jets game on. But
how about the end of that Falcons-Chiefs game was just unreal with Barry picking off the two-point conversion to give them the one-point lead, and they're able to hang on to it. Never before has a game been finished like that before. Just remarkable.
How good is Barry, and what a great story is he?
Yeah, well, he throws it a pick six earlier in the game, too, for good measure. Like, and that's why the NFL was so dumb for so long that they didn't adopt the CFL version of that, right, where you can, as a defense, return it the other way for 2 points. That's I can't even imagine being a Falcons fan there, right? Really? You have the game, you have it locked up, right? Like, at worst, you're up two, and then all of a sudden, well, I guess not at worst, because that happens. And then with I find it funny too, because ever since Brady's come back and he's playing at a ridiculous level, but it's Brady MVP basically shoo-in, how is Derek Carr not at very least Brady's equal?
He is, man. Right? He's getting all kinds of talk for that.
Because doing he's my MVP right
I would
now.
Say less. Doing it with less. You know, he doesn't have the defense that New England has. And
well, I don't know. People are yeah, I suppose so. But people are also poking holes in the defense of the Patriots right now. It is wild looking at that AFC
West. Well,
without
Gronkowski, that's a different game, too. Gentlemen, how about the San Francisco 49ers and the Chicago Bears game? Where?
Of course, I picked the Niners for a six-pack, and I watched the game a little bit, and they up 3-0, and they're in scoring position inside the 10,
you
I think, and get away with another
with
field
pick.
Goal, right? They up 6-0, and then the old unanswered points thing.
It was the second quarter, and I know we'll take phone calls, and if you want to ask me why I tortured myself by watching this game yesterday, I pay for the package so I can get the Bears games. and I can't get my money back, so I'm going to watch the Bears game. Colin Kaepernick was 1 for 5 till he got pulled in the fourth quarter for 4 yards passing.
It seems impossible.
Barkley for the Bears was 11 of 18 for 192 yards. Now, it was the second quarter before a pass was completed and in the snow, and it was for 4 yards. Colin Kaepernick got benched. Blaine Gabbert came in. He went 4 for 10 for 35 yards. I do not know, watching this game, how Chip Kelly was not fired on the spot. Huh. And I'm not one of those guys that dislikes Chip Kelly. I'm not one of those guys that disbelieves in his offense and all this stuff, or is there anything like that. Colin Kaepernick handed the ball off or ran his own plays, like rushed, the entire game. They did not try to pass. They did not try to pass the ball. He was benched in the fourth quarter after making 5 pass attempts in 3.5 quarters.
And this is the guy the last 4 games who's averaged 311 yards throwing, 9 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and they
don't tell me about the snow. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. There's a rookie quarterback, Barkley, throwing for 192 yards in the snow. It was. I had no idea what their game plan. I was in the third quarter. I'm like, are you not going to attempt to throw a ball? Like, think of your running back who's going up the gut 48 times already. They know what you're doing. Anyways, we'll talk more NFL, but some staple games and then the most bizarre one ever. Bears won 3 in a row. I'm embarrassed to say it. Not 3 in a row, 3 games. We'll take a break, come back. The Mercedes-Benz Power Hour is next on The Big Show. TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
iHeartRadio app is now available for preview. Download the app today and stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations for whatever mood or occasion. Your music, your stations, always free. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on a Monday morning that sees your Winnipeg Jets in 8th place in the Western Conference. After back-to-back road wins, 3-2 in overtime in St. Louis on Saturday night, and then on Sunday night, last night, this past evening, if you will, a 2-1 win in Chicago against the Blackhawks. No Corey Crawford, no Jonathan Toews, Andrew Kopp with the game winner. Here's head coach Paul Maurice after last night's game on the defensive effort overall from his Winnipeg Jets.
Block shots and some really good work there, but they're going to get some zone time too, but it was a pretty controlled game, you know, even with the switch offs and some of the movement they had up top. We were in the lanes and we were lined up pretty consistently.
Blake Wheeler moves to center and didn't look out of place at all.
Sure didn't. Both these games, guys, was just... it was awesome to watch both these games. The battle, full 200 feet. The forecheck in both these games I thought was spectacular. The back check, the support for the defense I thought was wonderful. I just thought what we saw Saturday and Sunday was just kind of mind-blowing and remarkable and super entertaining. And if they've taken a step here, you know, it's hard not to get a little bit excited with what you see transpire against arguably the two best teams in the West in a back-to-back situation, and the Jets go out and shut things down pretty dang well and are able to take care of business there and now have quite possibly some opportunities. You look at Detroit struggle, Calgary struggling. You look at the rest of this week with Detroit, New York, and Calgary thinking, hey, maybe they can continue here and make some hay.
Maybe. Just maybe. And we started
then again.
What I like the most about those last two games over the weekend, that was playoff Winnipeg Jet hockey. You know what I mean? Like, that was where, and there's something about Chicago that gets, I know he didn't have a chance to mess up Jonathan Toews, but there's just something about the Blackhawks that gets Adam Lowry up to a different level, and I thought the whole team played that way. Like, for the Blackhawks to have 3 shots at home in the opening period, impossible. I mean, that's outstanding hockey. And even through the first two periods, it was just, I don't want to say pure domination, but the ice was certainly tilted in the Jets' favor, and they played shutdown hockey. They really did. It was kind of surprising, too, because you look in the neutral zone, and pretty casual, right? Pretty close to having four guys right along their own blue line. It was more of a trappy style of a game, which I found interesting. We hadn't seen them.
The trap.
We hadn't seen them do that, and I kind of wondered to myself a little bit, with the amount of speed and skill, and maybe more so skill that the Jets have, if maybe kind of turning yourself into a Counter-Strike team isn't the worst option here.
Huh.
You know, because we've seen the defensive woes mask themselves, especially inside their own end, and maybe the best option for the team is to kind of play it loosey-goosey in the neutral zone there, send everybody back and force the other team to dump it in and maybe just try and strike in that sense, because that's how they scored the second goal too, right? Turnover, Andrew Kopp on a 2-on-1 there with a nice shot. Is similar to St. Louis too, a couple of 2-on-1s there. Like maybe Paul Maurice tinkering with how they deploy their team. Maybe he's found a bit of success here.
And I'll say this too, since the Nashville disaster for Dustin Byfuglien, and Paul Maurice soon after that saying that they've had a conversation, he's reeled it in pretty good as well. Good rebound for Byfuglien for that brutal game.
Yeah, and that's what happens, I think. Every player has bad games. You have a conversation. It's how you respond. And that's what you'd sort of come to expect from Dustin Byfuglien, I think, at this point in his career. You mentioned the trap, and we're joking about it, but did you guys hear Ken Danico's conversation with Rick Ralph last Tuesday when he was in town with the Devils? Mm-hmm. What a phenomenal conversation that was, not only about like sticks and right lanes and all that, but when he said, I'm so tired of hearing the trap. And he said, when we were winning Stanley Cups back in those years, he said, people forget it because they kept hearing trap, trap, trap. He goes, it wasn't a trap. We were just that good in the neutral zone. He said, we led the National Hockey League the year, 1 year in goals for, and the next year we were second when we won the Stanley Cup for goals for. Like, he was, it's not like we trapped everybody to death. It was just, we were that good at playing that style.
Mm. And trapped everyone.
And I didn't know that. Like that, I didn't know that when they won those that Stanley Cup that they were second in the league in overall scoring.
I did not know that.
I knew they were 1 year, but they. I mean,
they were
wrong.
The kings of
he's
trap.
Wrong. They yeah. did trap. I'm sorry. Like players like to remember things a certain way, but that's how they played. Like they just had tremendous offensive players to go along with it, right?
He was saying that, like, he say it was our style that we could play because we had these great players that could play 200-foot games that really wasn't the style back then, and people labeled it the trap. But he goes, we never literally sat in a practice, and Lemaire never literally consciously had us work on this trap thing that everybody keeps talking about. And he said, and we were scoring goals. We were scored the second-highest scoring goal team in the league the year we won the Stanley Cup. Mm. Anyways, it was a really interesting conversation on a different note. You mentioned Andrew Kopp, the game-winning goal. He rang one off the iron just prior to scoring the game-winning goal last night. Here is Andrew Kopp on his game winner.
Kind of a rolling puck, actually. Posty made a good step up in the middle, and Dano kind of just chipped it into the zone. I saw I had a little bit of gap to work with on Hjalmarsson, and then just kind of cut to the middle and went low blocker and let out a little bit of emotion afterwards, finally, after that last goal. So, saw a shot and took it, and, thankfully went in.
Andrew Kopp played the entire year with the Winnipeg Jets last year as a rookie coming out of Michigan. He then starts the year with the Moose, and they say it's predominantly not that he had a bad camp, but they want him to evolve his offensive game. They want him to do what he did in his rookie year, which is win faceoffs and be tough defensive center. They now move him out to the wing after some time with the Moose, where he got some power play time and everything else, and they want him to evolve his game. And that's a guy that I think is ahead of schedule. He's not lighting it up with points, but for a guy who's only played a year and a little bit, you can see different aspects of his game evolving, which is what you want from every player, but he's been impressive since he got called back up.
Yeah, I agree, and he just flat out skates his ass off, right? Like, he's out there busting his butt, something fierce out there, and when you take into consideration 6 points in 18 games, that's not a bad contribution from your third line, and for sure he is morphing and maturing into being something more than that, quite a handful out there, and he's physical, strong as heck. It's not hard to imagine him staying out on the wing with Lowry going forward here. Not hard to imagine that at all.
No, and I talked about Marco Dano when he got into the first game, him not coming out of the lineup anymore the rest of the season. Andrew Cobb might have just found a similar route to staying with the Jets. Like, I don't know how things become difficult when Armia and Mathias come back in, but as of right now.
Well, but that it's really neat when you say those two guys specifically, Wicks, and because the whole third, fourth line, like how that whole thing works, right, with Armia and Mathias. Like, it's really, I don't know how they're going to do it from a personnel perspective, but like you said, when Dano came, he wasn't going anywhere, and it's really hard to imagine that line at this point in time, the Cop, Lowry, Dano. Like, that is such a beautiful look out. We're bringing it. They're coming at you, and they have the capacity to be productive as well. It's really hard for me to imagine them busting that up.
Similar with Mathias and Armia, though, when they were playing with Lowry, right? Like, That's kind of the balancing act that has to happen here. But with Kopp, and we saw this in Arizona when I think it was against Mike Smith. It might have been against Louis Domingue, but came in down the wing and just ripped one. And he's got a hell of a shot, like a real, real strong release. And he should have scored earlier in the period when Panarin got his game-tying goal. But you can tell when a guy comes in clean and consistently fools and beats goalies that he's got kind of an upper-end shot. The problem with Kopp is he just not offensively gifted enough to get open enough to use it, but when he gets in space there, he just flat out beat Darling, no screen, two times in 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got a great shot, and that's not a bad weapon to have there if he kind of slots in on the fourth line in the future. But it's just another one of these depth guys for the team that you just didn't see a few years ago. Whether or not he gets into the lineup, you know, throughout the rest of the season, we'll see. I think he does, but to have that kind of option basically at a moment's call, right? Like, it's so refreshing to see that with the team this year.
Well, and the thing I like about it is they both can take faceoffs if they keep Cop Lowry out there. So you're that third checking line that has to shut down some high-end guys, and if one guy gets tossed, you got the other guy that can take faceoffs. You see the Jets are working on so many things, trying to make so many players multifaceted, which every team has to have nowadays in the National Hockey League. We're going to take a break here on The Big Show, and when we come back, we're going to talk goaltending. Michael Hutchinson got the call on Saturday night. Was it surprising? We'll ask these two gentlemen, and then, of course, Connor Hellebuck back in the net last night, and we'll hear from Connor Hellebuck, who said it was exhausting. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. And we want to let you know that if you order a holiday pizza at hoppspizza.com during their holiday drive, for every holiday pizza sold this December, Hops will donate another pizza to Siloam Mission. More info at hoppspizza.com. And it is definitely winter outside today as the snow is here, although not staying. What are we looking at again, Brandon?
It's warm out, man.
Tell us two old people what we're looking at weather-wise. Give us the weather. Troy, let's talk about the weather.
Yeah, that's what...
All I know is I was shoveling soft snow yesterday from all the ice melting. If this is winter, man, I'll take this.
Yeah, we got 10 centimeters tonight, 10 centimeters tomorrow is what we're looking at.
That's a whole bunch of snow, yeah.
Whole bunch of snow. Anyway, did you see that Hellebuck kid last night? I'm just trying to be
especially in the madness. Did you guys find yourself looking for a paper bag or something those last couple of minutes? It's like, holy smackers. It seemed inevitable that they're going to score. Like, who thought that Chicago wasn't going to tie that sucker up, man?
Late penalty by Jacob Trouba. They were under siege. Connor Hellebuck getting the win last night. Michael Hutchinson gets the start on Saturday in St. Louis. And Connor Hellebuck last night gets the call in Chicago. And, of course, with Mr. Trouba in the box for a double minor for high sticking, Connor Hellebuck made 25 saves on 26 shots. He had a 962, but basically was under siege for the last 2 minutes of that game. And here's Connor Hellebuck in the last few minutes where he helped the Winnipeg Jets hang on for a 2-1 win.
Probably the most tired I've ever been playing hockey. Pretty exciting too, just watching it all happen and kind of getting a read for and a feel for what's going to happen, and then watching like guys like Tanny block shots is just, it's a great feeling back there.
Just peppered, and the puck movement and what was going on the last couple of minutes, but Hellebuck hangs on. We'll start on Saturday, though. Let's start with Michael Hutchinson getting the call. I thought with the way Hellebuck played against the Oilers, Paul Maurice would come back with him. But again, just when you think you have things figured out, you don't. Michael Hutchinson on Saturday, 20 saves on 22 shots. Just a 909 save percentage, but he gets the overtime victory over the St. Louis Blues on the road. Were you guys surprised Hutchinson got the call after the way Hellebuck played on Thursday? Just because Paul Maurice has always said, I like to get a guy back out there, and there was a day off, and just the rotation of it. I mean, who's going to question it now? It worked. Both games were wins, but your thoughts on the role?
I didn't try to guess on what the rotation was going to be. I just said that I wanted Hellebuck to get back on track. I thought Hutch had a real solid game, and the Jets also helped him a lot. When you look at the shot chart, there's not a whole lot of offerings inside the high danger area, a whole bunch of sort of outside of that, and even the perimeter. I thought Hutch had a real nice game against St. Louis, though.
Yeah, I didn't like the first goal, the Steen slapper on the rush there, but yeah, he made one hell of a save. I don't know, with 5-6 seconds left, something like that, inside the Jets zone. So yeah, he was good enough, right? And I think Hellebuck kind of the same, right? Where he didn't, not until the end, you didn't need Hellebuck to do a whole lot. And that goal by Panarin, just a nice play by the Blackhawks. But, boy, that save right there with a couple seconds left on Hossa. Like, that's the one,
that low left
that's
pad.
The one we've been waiting for, yeah, right? Like, that's the one you – and obviously with 2 seconds left you need, right? But haven't seen a ton of game savers from either goalie this year. And then that might have been the first one. It might have been the first one for the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, those are the saves that you kind of need, as I said. And they're also the saves that – like, if you don't get them, nobody's going to fault the goalie. But like I said earlier, those are the saves that if you want to win and that's in the National Hockey League that you need to get done. So we head into this week, Detroit here Tuesday, New York Rangers here Thursday, then back-to-back games on the road in Alberta, Calgary, and Edmonton Saturday, Sunday. Hellebuck back in net tomorrow night, gentlemen?
No question.
Yep, same sked. Hellebuck until you get to the back-to-back and you have them both in there. Yeah, this is Hellebuck. Like, it's Hellebuck's team.
Yeah.
And that's how it should be, right? We kind of know what Hutch is. What Hellebuck is still up in the air. Although he's definitely, like, if you take away the Edmonton game, hasn't had too many poor outings, right? Like, that was the first one in maybe a month, somewhere along that line. So he's been trending upwards.
You see the development, like, since the start of the season, and more often than not, the one goal that he should have, and despite the wins and the losses and the ups and downs, do you see him coming along now?
I can't say that because we're still too often seeing the one real soft goal. I mean, it's not that you're talking outside of this start that those soft goals are still prevalent. So I can't see any remarkable amount of development happening, but he's just overall pretty sound. If he can just take care of that soft goal per game, he's going to be spectacular. Like, that's really dragging him down. He will be spectacular, and I think that he will make that jump into being more sound with little tiny things positionally and then the hug and the post stuff. He's not far away, that's for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Just kind of, and from where he was at the start of the season, where it was maybe a couple of softies, right? You know, like, it just took him a while to get into the groove of things, and I think he's been playing real well. He's been playing, and the fun thing too is you listen to him talk after the game. He's having so much fun, and I like where his mindset's at too. Like, he's just—it's always kind of ho hum, even keel, win or lose. And he even said, like, playing good's great, but I feel like I've been kind of this way for a while now. That's all, as a goalie, that's all you can do, right? Just be sound and happy with your process, and just kind of hope the results come. Because he had the stinker against Edmonton, but even against Nashville, right, where he gave up 5. Nothing wrong with his game there.
It was cool.
Just kind of victimized.
Cool last night to see the hug from Captain Wheeler right after the game. It would be great to know what Wheeler said to him. Definitely words were shared there, and a nice hug at the end of the game.
I would presume eventually it led to a thank you, given Fair. The last yeah. couple minutes of the game there. But we'll talk much more about the weekend the Jets had. A 3-2 overtime win in St. Louis and a 2-1 win last night in Chicago. And the Winnipeg Jets find themselves this Monday morning, 28 games played, 28 points, 13-13-2, eighth in the Western Conference. Calgary's played 28 games as well, and the rest of everybody in the West has games in hand on the Jets. They host Detroit tomorrow. We'll talk about the weekend and tee up this week when we hear from Mr. Paul Edmonds next, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki carrying you through your Monday morning. Two big wins for the Jets on the weekend. 3-2 overtime in Sweet St. Louis, and then they went to Chi-Town and pulled out a 2-1 victory over the Blackhawks as well. They have an off day today. They'll host the Detroit Red Wings tomorrow night, the New York Rangers Thursday night, and then back-to-back games in Alberta on the weekend, a Saturday night in Calgary, Sunday in Edmonton against the Oilers. To talk about this and all things Jets, we welcome back into the program Mr. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, right here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. And this segment with Paul Edmonds is brought to you by Go Chase Chevrolet on McPhillips, where for the month of December, play Connect and Win for a chance to win your vehicle for free. Jim Goche Chevrolet, one block north of Inkster. Mr. Edmonds, how are you?
Thank you, bad. Jimmy, Westy, Brandon. I'm good.
All right, thanks. We'll talk to you later. I'm just giving you the gears because I know that's a quick turnaround, I know. What time did you guys land?
A little bit later, I think, because of the weather in Chicago. I'm not quite sure. We had to de-ice. I wasn't really paying that much attention. We were a little bit later kind of getting out than we thought we were going to. And then, of course, that whole system, I don't know if it's going to follow us up here, but better start the snowblower today because I think we're going to get it tonight, and I want to be ready to dig out tomorrow when Detroit comes to town and be able to get to work. So, good weekend for the Winnipeg Jets, and you know, it was kind of interesting to see the snowfall in Chicago yesterday, as thick as it did. And you being a Bears fan, you probably watched the game on TV between San Francisco and the Bears, and knew exactly what the weather was before the Winnipeg Jets hit the ice last night.
And it was like doing time, Paul.
I've never done time, so I wouldn't know. Although there was a night in swift current.
Oh, boy. Let's shift gears here.
That's outstanding.
Blake Wheeler's been ridiculously impressive throughout this entire season here, Paulie. What he did over the weekend making the shift to center, what an outstanding contribution he made over these last couple of games.
Well, I think that just comes down to pure leadership. You know, asked to play a different position, and you go there, and I mean, you're so skilled that you look pretty adept at doing it. And he did admit that he's played a lot of center growing up, and usually guys that have his skill set, the ability to skate, the ability to shoot, his height, and certainly some other things that he brings in the whole toolkit, have played center along the lines. I mean, it's a position that in youth or in minor hockey, you usually have your best defensive forward and your skilled guy that can combine both that 200-foot game in either end of the rink, and the ability to shoot, distribute, think the game, and skate is usually a guy that you're going to have as one of your three centers, and he's probably played that position many times as his head. And then certainly kind of getting toward university, he played a little bit as well for the University of Minnesota. So it's not a position that he's not familiar with. He just hasn't played a lot of it as a centerman in the NHL. But what's probably helped him is a little bit of familiarity over the last few years under Paul Maurice, who's moved his centerman around and had guys like Blake Wheeler come off the wall to take draws in their own zone or in the offensive zone, depending on where he wants them and which side of the ice the draw is on. So there's been that familiarity of late for a guy like Blake Wheeler to come into the middle and get a little bit more positioned for that move. So now he moves into the middle, and he looked pretty natural there for me, if you will. And I think that it just speaks to the leadership that he has, that you can plug and play him anywhere. Yeah, let's go do this. There's no carping about what's happening, certainly with injuries or guys going out. and the versatility of what this team has been able to do in adverse conditions with the different players that are playing on the wing or in the middle or wherever you're asking them to go. Andrew Kopp's another guy that's played center pretty much all his life, and now he's on the wing, and I thought that line was great last night. But just back to Blake Wheeler, he's been the best player. He's, as Paul says, the driver or one of them, and what you get from Blake Wheeler every night is what you want your team to be, and that's probably why he's wearing the C, because he is the guy that sets the tone. Every single shift is the same from Blake Wheeler, and that's what they want the young guys to see.
Paul, every team wants their players to be multidimensional and versatile, but is it a conscious effort to develop this way, players this way with the Winnipeg Jets? We heard about Kopp going down. They want him to score more and stuff, but we never heard, like, we wanted him to learn to play the wing or Wheeler and stuff. Like, I know Paul Maurice has done it a lot, but is it a conscious effort as a part of development to get, you know, this versatile for most of their players?
Jim, I don't think so. I really don't. I think, honestly, the truth is they'd love to have every player that they broke camp with play all 82 games and not have to worry about this. They've been forced into this. They've been forced into creating movable parts as they've gone along, especially up front with the Kopps and the Wheelers and with Perreault and some other players that have had to kind of move around, whether it's been your own wing or shifting over to the other side. Which Drew Stafford has done certainly on that line with Blake Wheeler as well. So no, I don't think that this has been by design. I think it helps you develop your depth organizationally and certainly at the top level as you go along. But they've been forced into this because of the amount of injuries that they've had from the start of the year until this point. And now they're starting to get some people back, but it can only serve them well. You know, whether it's this year, next year, the year after that, with guys being able to play a multitude of positions and do it well. That's the other thing. You can put somebody into a spot and ask them to play there, and they're going to say sure, because they want to help the team, because they want to win, because they're competitive just by nature. Otherwise, you wouldn't be at this level. But how well do you do there will also serve how well you think you're doing and contributing to the team and how much you're really going to contribute to the team. So, you know, there's two sides to this thing. It's plug and play for sure, but the ability to plug and play and have some success and do some things that will help you win hockey games. So not by design, I don't believe, but it certainly will bode well for them looking ahead into what will be, I think, an interesting sort of December here as we move along, and then into the new year when you start to get St. Armia or Matthias or a Myers back as well.
Paulie, we haven't had a chance to talk to you since the St. Louis game, but whether it was the dangle that basically froze Petrangelo or the goal or the beauty feed over to Little for the game winner, Patrick Laine continues to blow our mind.
Well, there was a little bit of a pattern that was developing, and that was Patrick Laine was real, real good at home and then certainly was struggling a little bit, not just with goals, but his play, his overall puck possession, his ability to take that loop out of his game a little bit on the road. And now we're starting to see those two worlds come a little bit closer together. And I thought these last two games on the road for Patrick Laine have been his best road games of the year. He's contributed points. He's certainly been dynamic. We've seen the shot. We know all about that. He's more than a one-trick pony, though, guys. That pass he laid on the stick of Brian Little was something that was artful the other day, the way he got around Petrangelo. And then just when you think he's going to pull it back to fire that shot without very much of a release, he ends up laying a little bit of a backhand saucer over to Brian Little, who, by the way, was almost hugging the goal line there in that near side post when he shot that puck toward the net. It was a pretty adept shot of his own, but Patrick Laine just seemed to find some instant chemistry with Brian Little over the course of the weekend, and it seems like he's found his game in both, you know, both arenas, whether it be his or on the road, and that's only going to help him and the Winnipeg Jets. But he's been pretty special, as everybody's talked about. He can do a lot of things, and he's starting to really look like the game is slowing down for him in both sides, you know. And it's been fun to watch because he's a huge contributing factor to what the Winnipeg Jets have done and are going to do. The other part of this, too, is that Nikolaj Ehlers sometimes over the course of that road trip, we talked about this in the pregame show yesterday, was probably the most dynamic player, most visible player during the road trip where they lost five in a row. But he's kind of the guy that's, you know, leading the team in assists and second overall in the league in assists coming into the game last night. But a little bit of the forgotten guy because all the focus is on Patrick Laine. But those two are really the players of the future for the Winnipeg Jets. And it's certainly fun to watch right now, especially with them being on the same line and Brian Little in the middle.
Talking with Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca this morning on The Big Show. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Paul, you know, Brian Little comes back to the lineup, hasn't missed a beat, and we've all talked about on all formats on this station about how important he is to this lineup, but I'll go back to when Jacob Trouba came back from his holdout, and I went down there and was watching him speak, and I remember when the scrum broke up, I said to a couple people that, you know, I've never seen him look this big, this in shape, this fit, and he doesn't miss a beat. Like, is this a team that when Paul Maurice came in, and I go back to his first half season there, or less than half a season, when, you know, he had a real big bag skate towards the end of the year and sort of mentioned that this wasn't punitive, it's just about what's to come. And then when he had that training camp, his first full training camp, he mentioned this isn't punitive, it's so that in February, when we're down a goal with 7 minutes to go in the third, we can muster something up. To me, it just seems that there's no bigger telltale sign of how much better in shape, not that they were in bad shape, but fitness level there is, then when Jacob Trouba comes in, doesn't miss a beat. Brian Little comes back from injury, 4 points in four games. Like, how is this team where these guys come back and not missing a beat fitness-wise?
Well, I think that you can go even further than that, than just a couple of bag skates or that man's training camp, as Paul suggested in his first full year 3 years ago. Now, it was a couple of years ago when they decided to bring in Dr. Craig Slonwhite as their director of fitness. And he is now the, you know, the health conscious compass of this team when it comes to doing things right in the weight room. Cause I mean, if you know Dr. Craig Slonwhite, he is in tremendous shape, and then eating right. And that's the key to this too. I mean, he watches these guys. He works out with them. He has a workout regimen for them. I think that his presence has certainly aided to what you're talking about, Jim. And that's why they went out and got him. I mean, he had been in the NHL for a couple of different stops, and then they went out and got him. And he's been here 3 years now. And his level of commitment to making sure that these guys are fit, eating properly, properly rested, I think has certainly helped them when it comes to their ability to come off IR, that being the injured players, and be plugged in right away and not have to have that two or three games to get up to NHL game speed. They're ready to go right away. Also, he works with them off the ice when they're trying to get back in their recuperation and their rehab to get back into the lineup. So I think that a lot can be said for the addition of the additional strength and conditioning and fitness coach in Slaughter, as they call him. And I think that that's certainly paying dividends, as we're seeing now and we're talking about right now, because I think that this team as a collective is probably in the best shape and best condition, I guess is a better way of saying it, than they have been in the 6 years that they've been back in Winnipeg.
Back at it tomorrow night when the Detroit Red Wings come to town, and you'll hear it live right here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca with Mr. Paul Edmonds. Paul, thanks for this, and enjoy your down day.
I will, guys. And by the way, Slaughter hasn't done anything for me, so I'm still waiting for him to help me a little bit.
You know, I knew they were in good shape when Brian Munns took me out for a round of golf last summer, I believe, and I met the doctor. He was with us. The guy's, like, ripped, chiseled, but then I'm trying to woof down a coffee and a bagel, and he's, like, eating something that's been tested 12 times and just, like, phenomenal. And then, you know, just having a brief 9-hole conversation with the guy and just, you know, where it is. There's nothing that he hasn't ingested himself that hasn't been read about, dissected, studied. So you know you're on the right page when he himself is doing it, and it's probably tested it himself to see what works best for some of these guys. It just stood out to me, Paul, that these guys never miss a beat. Like, I expected Jacob Trouba to take two or three games. I expected Brian Little, and he said it himself, a game or two. But it just seems like these guys, it surprises me that when they come back in the lineup, they're just ready to go right away.
And boys, remember all the criticism, and it's largely unknown, of Jacob Trouba and his training habits, right? You don't come back and fit in that seamlessly if you've got problems with your training.
Yeah, they said because he wasn't working out with Gary Roberts and Mark Scheifele anymore, there was all that criticism about his fitness level and everything. And I think that young players do take two or three seasons to figure that out collectively. But when I saw him when his first press conference back or scrum, I was like, wow, I've never seen Jacob in better shape.
Well, guys, I'll tell you, it's been interesting. The other part of this is, and I know you're up against the clock, is that he will fly around, that being Dr. Craig Slonwhite, he will fly around over the course of the summer to monitor how the players are doing and their workout routine that he has submitted to them as a regimen for the summer. So, you know, he's on them all the time. Interesting, too, because I interviewed him 2 years ago and we aired it. I asked him if he's ever eaten a cookie. He said no. So there you go. Wow.
That's kooky. That's crazy. Thanks, Polly. Take care, brother.
See you guys.
Never eaten a cookie?
Well, that's like Milt Stegall. He's never had a drop of alcohol. He's never...
Well, booze is one thing, but a cookie? Ever? I'm calling BS on that.
I'd rather have a beer than a cookie. But that's just me. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Best Christmas ever, thanks to everyone who took time out to support Toy Mountain and Salvation Army this past weekend at CF Polo Park. If you didn't get a chance to join us, you can still drop off cash or toy donations up until Christmas at Winnipeg Scotiabank locations, Winnipeg Police and Fire Paramedic locations, and Virgin Radio Studios at 1445 Pembina Highway, which is also where our TSN 1290 studios are, and Bob FM studios as well. And thanks to all the sponsors who helped us out. Holiday Pro Lighting, TanFX, Salisbury House, Coal and Canary Candles, Tim Hortons, Subway, and Hops Pizza. Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca with Jim Tull, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. With two road wins, gentlemen, in the Central Division, as along with the victories, that's big too. The Winnipeg Jets find themselves in eighth this morning. Tied with the Los Angeles Kings and the Minnesota Wild with 28 points. Calgary is in ninth with 28 points as well. Calgary and Winnipeg have played 28 points. LA just 25. Minnesota just 24. And they sit in sixth in the Western Conference. Calgary gets Johnny Gaudreau back. He scores in his first game back last night. Big 8-3 win over the Anaheim Ducks at home. Who in the West? And here they are. Chicago, St. Louis. Chicago has 35 points. St. Louis, 32. San Jose, 31, Edmonton, 31, Anaheim, 29, Minnesota, LA, Winnipeg, Calgary, all with 28 points. Nashville is 26, as does Dallas, Vancouver, 24, Arizona, 20, 19. Who worries you as we go forward here? Is it predominantly in the top eight going to stay the same, the top 10, or is there a team that's you're sort of concerned about that might do some damage here as we go forward?
You know, man, I think that's a great question. Like, I think you're kind of asking who's maybe the dominant can't-miss type team that exists in the West. And I dare say there isn't one. Is there one? And I know Chicago right now with Taves out and now with Crawford out as well. Like you'd figure when it gets time, right, when the playoffs start, Chicago will be of concern for sure. But they're not, you know, they're struggling as of late a little bit, 5-4-1, and struggling with their special teams. Wasn't it something yesterday, those special teams, huh? Listening to how unsettled the crowd was. But, you know, St. Louis is strong, Minnesota's strong, but neither is really overwhelming. San Jose, sitting on top of the Pacific, is strong, but not overwhelming. Edmonton will be interesting to see if they're able to hold or if they end up fading or not. But there's nothing really in the West, to me, guys, no one team that's there standing there going, okay, let's go. We're going to be dominating here.
It's a different era. You know, like we see powers all the time rise and fall, and it had been the West of the NHL for a number of years now, but it's the East is the superior conference right now. That's just the way it is. All the good teams right that are playing right now at the NHL essentially subside out East. And Troy's right. Like there's just not a lot of separation between any team outside of Colorado, Vancouver, and Arizona. Like, those three teams, to me, are done. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is in the mix. And I don't know. I still don't think we know who the best team is. I'd probably give it to Chicago right now. But even look at the goal differentials. Minnesota leads the conference at plus 15, but then after that, Edmonton and San Jose, 10-9. Like that's the best after that. There's so much parity in the West this year that it's going to go like this right down to the end of the season. I think there's going to be 10, 11 teams fighting for the last X amount of playoff spots.
Exciting times. Speaking about being in good shape, JP Vijay joins us next on The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We'll find out if he's ever eaten a cookie.
This is The Big Show podcast on tsn1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Big shout out to Andy Rewicki and all the great guys and gals at Selkirk Chrysler. Set to snow a whole bunch over the next couple of days, and I don't give a dang. Throw it into four-wheel drive in the Jeep Cherokee. Little nippy, just put on some heated seats, heated steering wheel. Absolute luxury. Love it. Jeep Cherokee. More information, go to SelkirkChrysler.com. Selkirk Chrysler, just a slap shot north of Winnipeg.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca, kicking off your Monday. As Troy said, it is expected to snow over the next couple of days, but we'll keep you warm. Come, warm yourself by the fire of The Big Show on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. The Winnipeg Jets, of course, coming off a big road weekend. Two big wins against Central Division rivals, a 3-2 victory Saturday night against St. Louis in overtime, and then, of course, last night against the Chicago Blackhawks at the Madhouse, 2-1 over the Blackhawks. Jets return home. They have an off day today. They'll host Detroit Tuesday. They'll host the New York Rangers on Thursday. Then they'll head out to Alberta for back-to-back Saturday and Sunday against the Calgary Flames and then the Edmonton Oilers. Another big week, as they are all big in the National Hockey League. And to talk about it, we welcome in our Jets analyst here on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca, JP Vijay. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. Trying to get the picture out of my mind of you, me, and Troy sitting by a fire. Troy with his lotion and you with your mustache goatee.
Whoa. Well, the lotion is what's the frightening part, especially by an open flame. I'm not sure that lotion won't go up close to an open flame, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
We were talking about the fitness levels of the Jets, and you're a guy who keeps fit. Have you ever had a cookie?
Oh, on occasion, but, you know, you have it after on a cheat day or on a day you deserve it.
Excellent news.
Hey, JP, just so we can, because it's been so remarkable, the change in that aspect of training in the young players. Can you maybe just point out to us, to the best of your knowledge, how different things were when you first came into the league compared to where they're at right now for training and off-season programs and such?
Yeah, when I started to come into the league, even in the American League or the International League, There was kind of two guards. There was the young guard who did the workouts, and there was the old guard who came into camp being in shape. And that was really the start of it. And I remember being 24, 25, and really having to dedicate myself because I was kind of in the middle of both the young and the old, that you had to work out and get bigger and stronger and faster. And you could see every year the young guys came in, they could do more, and eventually the old guard had to go away, otherwise they were going to lose jobs. And now it's just become the norm for everybody. And you're seeing the benefits of it. The young guys come in, they're ready to play. And the old guys, the fitness level they have, the pace of the game is quick right from the start of the season and carries through right till the end.
And JP, it's interesting to me because even the last decade, it's not like everybody's not in shape. They are. But it's a real science and an individual for each person on just to get the most out of the fitness level that you can be in for your body type. It's real interesting to me because the reason we're talking about it today is I brought up the point of it's stunning to me how Jacob Trouba comes back in the lineup and doesn't like even need a game or two to get his feet back under him and not look out of place. Same with Brian Little. Like it's interesting how it's transferred from when you were there to where now everybody is in shape, but even the Jets got in better shape, it seems to me, once Paul Maurice took over.
Yeah, I think there's conditioning A and then there's conditioning B. And every player is built differently, made differently, and has different expectations on how they need to prepare themselves. And when the two kind of align, and when you have a direction that Paul Maurice has, and it's very clear in the communication, he wants Blake Wheeler to play lots of minutes. You don't need Blake Wheeler to add on any bulk. You need him to be quick, have high endurance, be able to recover really quick. And some other guys are different where they're not going to play as much, so they can afford to have a couple extra pounds to grind it out in the corners, and they'll have an extra minute on the bench to recover. So the expectation of each player is different. And so that manages that. And then when one player starts to push, everyone else has to follow. And you're really seeing that with Blake Wheeler. He's the pusher, right? His conditioning level is high. He grinds it out every day like it's his last game. So everyone else in the room has to follow or they fall behind. And then that becomes your culture. And that's what you want as a coach, is the culture coming from the players, not just from your voice.
That's a real cool point. It's such a hugely important point that you make there, JP, is when you get the guys in the room, like if they're driving the level of off-season programming and training and diet, you get like Wheeler doing it, Scheifele. If those guys are driving it, then you're into truly something truly magical instead of the team having to try and come and impose it on people that aren't all that thrilled about it.
Yeah, and you saw that early in the years with Paul Maurice when he came in kind of partway through the season, how he was disappointed in the conditioning, and he would actually just skate the guys just to prove a point of how he wanted their fitness level to be better. And I think some of the leaders, the Andrew Ladds, the Brian Littles, the Blake Wheelers, took that to heart, and you saw them come in for the man's camp, as they called it, and now the man's camp is the norm, right? Everyone has that expectation that you're ready, and when that becomes, and that's how you get that winning culture, that culture of expectation, and as much as a coach wants to impose his will on a team, it's way harder to do if he doesn't have buy-in from his leaders, and now he's got big buy-in from his young leaders, and Blake Wheeler and such. Now everyone follows, and instead of having to talk about it all the time, it's just done, and that's the way it should be.
A Jets analyst here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, JP Vigée, joining us this morning on The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. I tweeted last night after the Blackhawks game with the Jets, JP, that we may never know this season what to expect or what this team is this season, and that's okay because it's so exciting. Well, what do you take from the two wins and the season so far?
Well, what we've seen all year. I mean, the Jets can win against the best, and they can keep up to them, and they have the skill to play. It's just a matter of doing it on a nightly basis, which is the hard thing to do in the NHL. It's not something that you can turn on and off, pick your nights and say, oh, we're playing Arizona, we're going to take it off, and we'll still win. That doesn't happen in the NHL. And I think learning how to play, learning how to win, and these two wins that we've seen over the weekend may help the belief of the young guys of a recipe of how to play on the road. Some good defensive hockey, some short intense shifts, some good puck management, and when you get your opportunity, you try and do the best with them.
JP, one of my favorite quotes over the last few years is Ray Ferraro when talking about being a center and going out to wing, saying basically you just got to turn your brain off and any centerman can go play the wing. The other way around, though, you just don't see a lot of wingers go play center at a real high level, and you lose your top-line center in Scheifele, and then Blake Wheeler steps in and plays at just a remarkable level. What are your thoughts on what he accomplished over the last couple of games?
Well, it's definitely something you can put in your hat, because when you can have players that can go either way, you can manage your lineup so much better, like what happened on the weekend. You know, a surprise injury, it's one quick move, and you're still strong down the middle like you want to be as a team. And, you know, it's hard, you know, from timing, positioning, playing the full 200-foot game. You know, winger plays tops of the circles in his zone all the way down to the offensive end. Centermen, they play board-to-board on both sides and the length of the ice. And the grind in both offensive zones and in the defensive zones. So that becomes very much more taxing. I mean, we all know what kind of conditioning he has, but mentally on back-to-back nights, you know, staying in position. We saw a couple times that Blake wanted to be a little bit more aggressive because he normally does that as a winger. He had to kind of hold himself back and almost slow down and read the play and follow the play and support it as a centerman. It's not easy to do, and let alone take faceoffs and grind it out and still do the things he does. So it was very impressive to see, and it'd be interesting to see what they do when Scheifele comes back, if that's an asset they have.
Well, he'll be a healthy scratch. Shifley has contributed nothing to these two wins.
Oh, he's terrible.
Hey, JP, we were also talking this morning about looking at the Western Conference, and there are the Chicagos and the St. Louis's and San Jose's in third and everything like that, and Minnesota's only played 24 games. They have 28 points and a goal differential of plus 15 to lead the Western Conference. But is this wide open this year, or at least more so than we've seen in the past years in the West?
Yeah, I think the discrepancy amongst the teams is less. I think the teams that have been good for so long are either having to bring in a lot of young guys because of salary cap issues, or they're starting to be on the decline of their big opportunity window of opportunity. The LA Kings aren't as heavy and as mean as they used to be in that. So I think it is more wide open. You're not seeing the teams be so big and heavy, and no one's running away with it. You know, St. Louis, yes, they're good, but last year at one point they seemed to be 2 miles ahead of everybody instead of just half a mile. So it'll be interesting to see, because 2 points or 4 points puts you in a way different position from, you know, ninth or tenth place to right into the wild card. So it's going to be a grind the rest of the way.
What music would be playing if you and me and Troy were sitting by the fire? And
I can't even. It'll make me sick to think about it.
Then that's just not the scent of the lotion that he'd be rubbing on. That's the music as well.
It's the hairy chest on one side and the lotion rubbing on my other shoulder. Just no.
Awkward, indeed. Indeed. Yes. Tricky. Thanks for your time, JP. We look forward to hearing from you throughout the week as the Jets have two home games and two more road games this week.
All right, sounds good. So I'll have a good one.
Take care, brother. Thanks so much.
Bye.
He is one of our lead Jets analysts here on TSN 1290, Mr. JP Vijay.
I just saw a tweet here from at Keeker Leica. I don't know that it was a retweet maybe, but have you guys, I just tweeted it out, the difference in the scoring charts from the distance of shots for goals for Laine and Crosby. It is amazing. Essentially, like Crosby's got nothing above the hash marks or outside the circle as for scoring. Everything is super in tight, close. Laine is all over the place. Like, obviously on Laine Island over there, a bunch of the goals, but the difference in distance is astonishing.
That tells me he's super lazy. He doesn't want to go any further down the rink.
I'll say it tells me out. Hashtag sniper.
Sniper. How good is Patrick Laine right now, do you think?
Has he made his case for the old – I heard Toronto people talking about that whole I should be the first pick thing sort of gaining momentum right about now.
Yeah, well, I don't buy that. I don't buy that for us. I know he's having a great start, but
like no. Matthews is going to be fine.
He's going to be fine, yeah.
Well, no, but he's going to be good. He's going to be really good.
That's so Toronto.
Well,
though.
You don't
think that's the most Toronto mindset.
Is Laine, from a goal scoring perspective, is Laine Ovechkin?
Well, that I might get on. Honestly, like, and, is it? Well, and we kind of joke about it. Second in scoring,
like it's stupid, right? This is an 18-year-old kid.
Well, and you look at the opportunity and the team and everything else too. Like I think that all plays in it. But Austin Matthews is. I think Paul Maurice is a coach that's more free to use him, and I know he's taken some heat this year. We've heard about it on the program. Well, why isn't he on this power play, and why is he down on the third line, this and that? I think he's more lenient on moving guys around than Mike Babcock is and giving him opportunities. I haven't watched a lot of Leafs games this year. I mean, Austin Matthews is going to be fine.
Yeah, he'll be fine. Fine's a funny word, isn't it? Whenever the word fine is used, it's always kind of a warning.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you this about Patrick Laine. He may be Alex Ovechkin, but he's also Alex Ovechkin right now in his own end. He's got a lot of work to do.
I think that's super harsh on him.
I
think he's way, way ahead of Ovechkin in that matter.
But having said that, it's not a negative comment on him. He's an 18-year-old kid that can snipe and score goals. That's the part of the game that you expect an 18-year-old to have to learn and develop.
Yeah, well, but you can't say that and then say it's not a negative statement. I mean, we hear Paul Maurice himself say, hey, he's a finished player, and he's got pretty good. I thought yesterday he made a couple of fantastic defensive plays in his own zone.
I think the only time he gets trouble inside his own zone, I think his positioning is outstanding. But the one thing, and this is easily correctable.
He's breaking out?
He a lot of the times he goes to his backhand and he tries these saucer passes and he tries to go on a defender one-on-one. He tries too many plays. And I think eventually, you would hope at least, that gets wiped out. But positionally, and he's a good back checker. Like, he does all the little things well. It's just plays like an 18-year-old top pick, right?
Yeah, like, that's what I mean. Like, I don't expect anything different. It's not like I didn't expect him. I did not expect Patrick Laine to come in here and be really good in his own end right out of the gate. I don't expect any guy to come into the National Hockey League and be very good defensively. It's a different speed. It's a different skill level. It's something you have to learn.
But I think it's unfair and borderline mean to him to compare him to Ovechkin before Ovechkin being bought in defensively. Patrick Laine is much more interested in playing defense at a high level than Ovechkin was early on.
No, he's not. You think he's much more interested in his defensive zone coverage than he is offensively?
No. I'm saying no. See, if you didn't interrupt me, you would have listened to what I said. I said he's much more interested in playing defense at a higher level than Ovechkin was before the arrival of Trotze. Like, you're never going to see Patrick Laine glide into his own zone from center on. Like, he's invested in playing at a high level defensively, although he makes mistakes.
I don't know. I guess. I forget how bad.
Like, I think it's Ovechkin in his DNA much more so than Ovechkin's, for instance.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had to have it drilled into him Clockwork Orange style from Barry Trotz.
That's a great reference. Still freaks me out when I see some of the 60s homes here in Winnipeg. I hear that music. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from both Paul Maurice and Brian Little on the back-to-back wins over the weekend on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
All right, I think of myself as a journalist. I like to stay even keel, look at all sides. I'm pretty biased when it comes to this. I'm pretty pumped. I'm just putting it out there right now. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki on The Big Show. TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. And TSN 1290 presents... Guns N' Roses. Not in This Lifetime Tour, Thursday, August 24th at Investors Group Field. Tickets on sale this Friday, December 9th, 9 a.m. at Ticketmaster. How badass are Guns N' Roses that they don't wait till 10 a.m.? It's 9 a.m. this Friday. Or listen here for your chance to win to beat the box office tickets all this week on The Big Show, and you can do it right now. August 24th. Middle of the summer, well, late summer, but nicest month.
I just hope it's early
Investors Group Field. In
the log of their concert dates so that this doesn't blow up. The tour doesn't blow up.
Well, they're already on tour, so I don't know if he's walking again or he's still in that creepy chair
he looks like something
from some movie. I don't know what. But Guns N' Roses, the Not in the Life This Lifetime Tour is coming to Winnipeg August 24th, 780-1290. We'll give you two tickets right now. We'll give you tickets all week here on The Big Show. And, of course, they go on sale December 9th at 9 a.m. at Ticketmaster. There are Van Halen, one of my favorite bands of all times. Mm-hmm. Guns N' Roses, right there with them. Yeah. And I love music. I love U2. I love, like, all kinds, all genres, mm-hmm. everything that's going on. And even the hair metal.
I make fun of hair metal,
but I know hair metal is what it is. But Guns N' Roses, there are those albums that mean
Use Your Illusion 1 and
2? No.
Specifically, no? You're like...
Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
And I read Slash's book and everything about, you know, all that went on. And I'm not a big about the whole lifestyle and all that. But I just, you read this book and how these five guys at 18, 19 years old just write this stuff. When hair metal was, like in Slash's book, he's talking about going out for Poison. Mm-hmm. And he plays and he's leaving the room and CeCe DeVal, who got the job, is coming in. He's got the hair and the makeup on already. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to get this gig. And I don't think I want it because these guys are just... Like that album and what they wrote and put together as kids, basically, and that sound, but at a time when it wasn't even, they just changed the whole genre of metal music or rock music. Appetite for Destruction was
a...
Yeah, influence. That's a great point. Anyways, Appetite for Destruction is the album for me that just... I listened to... I think it came out when I was in the 12th grade. and I just listened to it on my Sony Yellow Walkman. I burned so many batteries on that and so, and even to this day, I even a couple of years ago went and bought it for $9.99 just to have that CD when I know no one buys CDs anymore.
I always like the more mature GNR, the symphonic aspect of what they brought to the table. Their songwriting was at an apex. Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, man.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, awesome stuff.
I saw them once in Edmonton. Like, and so a couple of years, I was in college, so a couple of years after Appetite for Destruction. And anyways, they're reunited, they're back. I went to Axl when he was here a couple of years ago as Guns N' Roses, but with none of the original members. Ah. And he did as usual, didn't come out till like 11:10 or whatever.
I was a big Chinese Democracy fan. That was them at the height.
That's just
I wanted to see if Jim's head would explode, like literally just explode in front of me.
I'm not a violent guy, but I'm going to fight you during this next
commercial. Who won him, man?
Matthew Robinson.
Attaboy.
Matthew!
Hey,
welcome to the jungle, baby. Welcome to the freaking jungle. Once again, TSN 1290 presents Guns N' Roses Not In This Lifetime Tour, Thursday, August 24th at Investors Group Field. There's something about music outdoors in the summer, too. That's unreal. Tickets on sale Friday, December 9th, 9 a.m. at Ticketmaster. Or listen for your chance to win Beat the Box Office tickets this week on The Big Show. We were going to hear from Paul Maurice and Brian Little on the back-to-back wins, but they literally just called and said, just talk about the Guns N' Roses tour. Don't even worry about us. It's our off day. You can play that later. So congratulations to our winner. We'll do it all week long. And, of course, tickets go on sale 9 a.m. this Friday. For an outdoor Guns N' Roses concert. And Troy brings up a good point. We'll see if they last that long, but I'm sure they will. There's a lot of money to be had here, people. A lot of money. We'll take a break when we come back. Alex Pruitt from Sports Illustrated joins us on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Out here in the fields, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Wicke. I don't know the rest of the words. Great jam, though. On The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Back to On The Big Show once again, Guns N' Roses, August 24th, Investors Group Field. Tickets go on sale 9 a.m. this Friday. The Not In This Lifetime Tour, because they said it never happened. And then they got old and it happened.
Wonder what they'll call the next one. No chance ever again.
This is I think it's a funny story. My aunt, who lives in Whitehorse, Yukon, lifelong Eagles fan, grew up in the 70s, just loved the Eagles so much. And when they got back together, the Hell Freezes Over tour, she spent like $5,000. Like, this is like 15, 20 years ago, to fly from Whitehorse to Vancouver, get the tickets, hotel, all this.
Wow.
It'll never happen again. I'm doing it. Took time off work and all that. And then now they've gone on tour like 17 more times since then.
That was a heck of a show, though.
I never saw it. Never saw it, actually. Anyways, we're going to get back to hockey. The Jets coming off two big wins on the weekend. They go into St. Louis and win 3-2 in overtime. They beat Chicago last night 2-1. The Jets are home this week for two and on the road for two. The schedule mirrors last week. They host the Detroit Red Wings on Tuesday evening, tomorrow night. Thursday, the New York Rangers come to town. Another big test for the Winnipeg Jets. They then head out on the road Saturday in Calgary, Sunday against the Oilers. And then they'll head into the week prior to Christmas with back-to-back games in Vancouver the day off. So the Jets, two big wins on the weekend. They come back Detroit Tuesday, the Rangers on Thursday, and then two games in Alberta on the weekend. To talk some hockey with us, we welcome back in a staff writer for Sports Illustrated, Mr. Alex Pruitt. How are you, sir?
Hey, good morning.
How's everything going?
Oh, just fine.
I wanted to mention this because we touched on it briefly, and Troy made a good point. He was upset about it. But the National Hockey League Players Association getting that offer to sort of sign an extension on the PA and they can go to the Olympics. What did you make of that move overall? And was it as greasy as we thought it was of Gary Bettman, the commissioner, to sort of float that out there?
Greasy's perspective, I suppose.
Yeah, that's our view. That's my view to say.
It was, in my estimation, a first offer, right? You don't accept the first offer, and the first offer is generally pretty far apart from where you want to be. I guess you might as well try, right? You might as well try to slip that pass and see. Like, I guess test how badly they want to go. But to do that, I mean, my read is that it kind of showed their hand that they're pretty happy with where the CBA is, at least from the ownership side.
Alex, it's bad news for teams in the Central here in Winnipeg. We're not all that thrilled about it, but Devan Dubnyk is just flying right now, leading the league with a .946 save percentage. An interesting study inside the mind of Devan Dubnyk.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's not going to keep saving pucks at a .946 rate. I don't think anybody expects that, but I mean, both the eye test and the stats test will tell you that he's playing a lot better than he has in the past. So, I drove up to Philly. I live in D.C., so sometimes I just go up to Philly and catch road teams coming in and just chat with whoever I feel like chatting with. And I've always enjoyed talking with Devan Dubnyk. And so we sat down in the lobby of their team hotel, and I didn't really have any idea what I wanted to ask him, but I was just kind of started talking about the hot start that he had. And he had that one run where he had three straight shutouts, and then two of them were on the road, and he'd been facing a lot of shots and then having probably the best start he's ever had to a career. And all that juxtaposed with where he was a couple of years ago with, you know, going to the minors and being bounced around and his confidence seemed pretty shot. Just kind of started picking at that and came across this whole idea of this head trajectory thing, which, you know, at the bare bones of it, it's nothing new or novel, right? You look at the puck, you lead with your head and that kind of all the movements follow that. But the whole point is that you lead with your head. You don't lead with your arms or kind of open up holes by flailing about, that sort of thing. You stay tight and compact. So, I mean, when he went on his run in, I think it was 14-15, when he got traded to Minnesota, it blew up a lot because he had mentioned that he had talked with Steve Valiquette, the former goalie, about this. But he only really started digging into it in the summers following that. So we got into a much lengthy discussion, which involved him, like, getting on the carpet of the hotel lobby and, like, demonstrating stuff, which was kind of fun. Which to me indicated that he's really into it, that he's really bought into this, and he really credits it for where he is right now.
Alex, last time we talked to you, you were about to head to Vegas as they were going to unveil their logo and their team name, and that's happened now. What were your impressions of the whole event and how it went over and how it was received in the city of Las Vegas?
Yeah, I mean, the actual unveiling itself was a little comical, right? Where the video is botched, and I mean, they had done four or five dry run-throughs that morning. So the leftover thing from that was the Las Vegas placeholders, which was like just a delicious bit of icing on what's been a very long wait, I think, for everyone, the Vegas side included, that, you know, they had to go through trademark issues and jersey designs and logo designs, and it took much longer than they thought. So it was this kind of drawn-out wait where, you know, as the video is malfunctioning, you have people yelling, like, just show us the name already or stuff like that. But, I mean, once it was unveiled and before the actual ceremony kicked off, I thought it was a very, very good event. I mean, there was over 5,000 people packed in that plaza, and some of them were, you know, watching from the parking deck like tailgaters. And I think it was Gary Bettman remarked he had never seen anything like that for just the simple act of naming a team. But and we've got a pretty big story coming out later this week, which just kind of deals with the idea of, all right, well, now we know what to call them. Now it's their identity has kind of been released to the world, that for so long they were the Vegas TBDs, or the, you know, Vegas is hockey, or Vegas wants hockey, or, you know, Black Knight Sports Entertainment. They went through so many iterations of this on a journey that's really now topping 3 years in existence. I mean, this started back in 2013. When the Maloofs decide to sell the Sacramento Kings, and they go to Gary Bettman and they say, hey, we want to put a hockey team in Vegas. And granted, a lot happened in the interim, and that's the bulk of what my story will explore later this week in SI. But it all kind of culminates, at least for one night, on this grand spectacle where you have, you know, the Vegas glitz kind of married with the local culture that made this happen, right? Because, I mean, the casinos will buy tickets. The bigwigs and billionaires in town will buy tickets. Everyone knows that. But what they really needed to demonstrate was is their grassroots indigenous support of this team. And I think that was borne out in the way people turned out for that ceremony.
Alex, do you think they're going to be successful in Vegas?
Define success. I mean, they'll sell tickets for sure. I don't think they're going to be a particularly good team on the ice. I think they'll be better than expansion teams in the past, but those teams were, you know, filled out with fourth liners and third pairing guys. This team will probably be, I mean, they'll have a good goalie, they'll have a good 1-2 punch and goal.
But long-term, you think it works?
don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's let's see what the roster is. I mean, let's see how savvy George McPhee is at luring free agents. Let's see if Vegas is actually the destination that they want it to be, where, you know, between the tax and kind of the peaceful living out in the suburbs. Let's see if that actually attracts free agents. Let's see what kind of coach they get. I mean, so many things are unknown right now.
Alex, we're talking about the Western Conference, and of course the Jets go on the road, and it's been so, you never know what you're going to get from the Jets this year, and they go out on the road and beat two Central Division rivals on the weekend and now sit eighth in the West. And we're talking about the West overall. Is it more wide open than ever when we look at this division this year, in your mind?
The conference?
Yes, the conference.
It's certainly more wide open than it has been. I mean, look at the teams that are currently outside the playoff picture right now. It's, I mean, Nashville and Dallas were two teams you thought would pretty solidly be. I mean, Dallas is probably a question mark just because of their goaltending. But, I mean, you would expect Nashville to rebound. They're plus five in goal differential right now, and they're, you know, only 2 points. And that's the thing, right? They're 2 points back of the wild card. I mean, things are still early. We haven't even really hit the third way mark of the season yet. But I mean, for certain, things are certainly crammed there. I mean, I think it's pretty clear right now that the East is much stronger than the West is right now, top to bottom, in terms of depth, and some of the teams that are knocking on the door out there, like Toronto and Carolina and Jersey, and obviously Columbus has been on fire, and Ottawa's been playing well. But yeah, I mean, out West, it's a toss up right now. I mean, there's a lot of teams kind of jammed in there. I mean, I think you could safely say, I mean, Arizona's and Vancouver are probably not going to make the playoffs. I mean, Colorado really needs to figure things out if they're going to have any chance. But other than that, I mean, going up, I mean, you would project long-term that Nashville has a bunch of games in hand on people. L.A. seems like they're starting to figure it out. They've still been struggling a little bit on the road, but, I mean, they're still in the thick of things with good, strong numbers like they always are. I think Edmonton pretty clearly took a leap quicker than people expected, but not surprising at all given all the youth they have there.
With Washington in fifth place in the Metro, your thoughts on what they're achieving so far as a team?
They haven't achieved a lot, but none of this matters for them, right? Like, they achieved a heck of a lot last year before February, and then they just kind of stopped playing well. And that was their big problem, I think, last year, was that they got off to too hot of a start too fast, and people, and this isn't anything novel, people in the organization would readily admit that they peaked too early, and Pittsburgh was a team that was really struggling in December and made a coaching change, and then they took off, and Washington caught them at the wrong time, basically, or Pittsburgh caught Washington at the right time. I'm of the opinion that as long as they stay above water, much of what they do between now and like February doesn't really matter. I mean, they have the horses, they have the guys who've been around the block. This isn't a young team where you're nervous that they're not going to figure it out. They've won a lot of games under Barry Trotz already in two seasons. They have a strong lineup, provided that they stay healthy. They have probably a top three goaltender in the league, and Braden Holtby who's still playing very well for them and keeping them in games. They're just not scoring goals. And you would expect that on a team with Ovechkin and Justin Williams, and, you know, TJ Oshie's been hurt, and he was on a pretty hot pace there for a little while. But, I mean, you know, guys like Burakovsky and Kuznetsov aren't scoring, and Justin Williams hasn't been scoring. I mean, you would think that this is all going to turn around. I mean, the power play has been a problem. It looks a little stagnant right now. But at the same time, they're still high above 50% in terms of shot attempt differential. They're still putting pucks on net. They're just missing right now. So I don't think there should be too much cause for concern. But at the same time, as you mentioned, I mean, they're kind of hit a little. I mean, I think they're 2-2-1 in their past five games, which, I mean, for them counts as a slump. But if you project it down the road and you think some of the numbers turn around, the shooting percentage turns around, I think they're going to be in fine shape.
You can follow him on Twitter at Alex_Pruitt and read his fine work in Sports Illustrated, including a big piece coming up on the Las Vegas expansion team in the National Hockey League. Alex, we always appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy your week.
Cool. Take care, guys.
Thanks so much, Alex.
We'll take a break and delve back into the Jets' two big wins on the weekend over St. Louis and Chicago, and then open the Boston Pizza fan line. Lots to talk about. We'll tee it up next on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor of the 2017 Canada Summer Games. All eyes will be on our city next summer as 4,000 athletes from across Canada come to compete, featuring 16 sports and over 250 events. The 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games will welcome over 20,000 visitors, making this a can't-miss event. Volunteer registration is also now open if you want to be a part of it. Visit TSN 1290's website for your chance to win a night out with Milbin, including tickets to a variety of Canada Summer Game events. To stay up to date on event details, ticket offers, how to volunteer, and much more, visit 2017canadagames.ca or tsn1290.ca. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you, and lots to talk about this morning on The Big Show, and of course the Boston Pizza Fan Line, which will be open at 9 a.m. And we'll start with Mr. Tiger Woods, finishes 17th in the Hero World Challenge. Nobody had more birdies, but nobody also had more bogeys. Overall, I thought a pretty successful return to golf, much what I expected. I didn't have a lot of high expectations. His caddy and both Tigers saying the main thing was he finished the event, competed. Going forward, they're excited for what's around the corner. Your guys' impressions of Tiger Woods going forward and at this event?
Yeah, going forward is just a huge question mark to me. And it's great that, you know, he goes through it healthy and his swing looks like it's going to be a little easier on his body. But ultimately, I will not be convinced. Like, I'm not sure what, like, which Tiger. You know, this kind, friendly, smiling Tiger that can get a bogey or a double bogey and walk off the green smiling. Like, that's not Tiger Woods to me. Will he ever get back? Like, I don't think he can ever win another major because of the mental warfare that goes on and all the demons that swirl around in his head as he stands over big-time shots and that sort of thing. And that's what I wonder. That's what I miss the very most. And it just kind of makes me sad seeing this guy that after a bogey or a double, he's smiling so soon after that. That's not the guy that I remember and loved.
Yeah, I wonder if that changes as he gets better and better.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he kind of reverts back to that once he feels his game is fully around. But, I mean, remember what this guy was 16, 17 months ago, where it was you're around the green and you're just off it. And it's close your eyes, I can't look at the TV screen because he's about to do something that your average golfing buddy does out there. It was horrid and it was embarrassing. And to see where he's come to, how well he played over the weekend, and he did play very, very well. He hit some bad shots, but they weren't of the nightmare variety that looked like, I don't know what I'm doing here. It was more, I think, just trying to shake the rust off.
You can say he played very well in the second round, but that's about it, no?
Like,
he played okay.
He led the field with the most birdies.
But, brother, when you also have the most bogeys,
everybody else in that field has been playing golf. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been for 15 months. That's over a year.
Yeah.
I think you're selling him real short. I thought, for me, and I don't know the mental side of things, we're going to find that out. If he's ever around the leaderboard or at the top of the leaderboard in the fourth round on a Sunday. But at the very least, he proved game-wise, he still got it. For him to come back there out of basically nowhere and to play at the level he showed he could is huge in my
opinion. Yeah, like, I get what you're saying, Troy, and I understand it because he's tired and we expect, like, so much from him. But I think we have to put it in perspective and not forget that he's coming off major back surgery and hasn't played in 15 – like, if the birdies weren't there and the bogeys were, I would be more concerned. But the fact that you saw a little bit of everything in the up and down, I just think that's a guy who's returning to golf. And I thought it went pretty well. I'm also not sitting here going, I for sure think he's back and he's going to win a major. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that given the circumstances and seeing how he's played and the 2 days and how, you know, as it wore on, he progressively got worse. I just think that's like any guy coming off a major injury for sports of over a year. I liked what I saw, and I'm excited to see where this goes from here.
I'm hopeful.
Let's see what you think, too, on the Boston Pizza Fan Line when we open it at 9 o'clock. Also, the NFL, some big games yesterday, and Cam Newton gets benched for the first series, which turned out to be a pick six, I believe, or a pick anyway, that drove the field. I'm sorry, I shouldn't.
It was the first play.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was benched for one play. It was supposed to be the series.
And it went disastrous. Yeah. Why were you running? I don't get it. We're going to bench our quarterback for one play and try to throw a bomb. Anyway, But he's benched for a dress code violation. And, of course, because he's Cam Newton, a lot's being made of this. And he just said after the game, he's like, it's for not wearing a tie. You're supposed to wear a tie when that's the team policy with the Panthers. And he said, you can't wear a tie with this outfit. Like, that was his defense. And everybody's defending him. But I'm just sitting here going, well, then wear a different outfit.
I love Cam Newton, but this is pure A-clown. Like, this is ass-clown territory here, man. You know you have to wear a tie. Don't tell me you can't wear a tie with the outfit. That's absolute crap, man. You're supposed to be a leader of this team. Just shut up and follow the rules of the team. That we in this city understand, right? You follow the rules of the city or certain things happen, right? Like, and your leader as the quarterback, if he's of that mindset, come on, man.
Yeah, and I'm up for individuality. I'm up for spirit. I'm up for all this. I'm not like you must fall into line kind of guy. But on a team, it's pretty simple. And the fact that teams are vilifying Ron Rivera over this, or people are, is ridiculous to me. Wear another outfit.
And the
or
thing
just
is,
put a tie on.
You can't, I heard this talked about yesterday, you just can't fine, right? If you fine them, some guys write out a check, give a blank check to the organization and say, here, this is for all my fines this
there
season and do whatever the hell they want.
Of guys like Derek Coleman in the NBA days who would just write a check at the start of the year, leave it blank, and always wear a tracksuit constantly on the plane and just say, just fill it out for whatever you want.
Yeah.
Like, that's total disrespectful of what it's...
Complete A-hole.
The only thing I would get on Ron Rivera for is that he didn't bench him for the whole game. Like, your season's
or a quarter,
your season's
or
lost.
Half or something.
What's
like
a
that.
Play? And I know he wants to do the whole series, but what you think a series is that Cam Newton's going to all of a sudden change his mind on kind of
trying
to stick
it to
the man?
The other way, though. If you don't wear a tie, you broke a dress code violation, you should be benched for a bit, but I don't think you should be benched for the whole game for that.
Like, I think benching him for a series embarrasses him.
Yeah. That's what it should do. It should put the emphasis on you, like, you can't wear a tie with this outfit. Are you, what are you, 12?
Maybe there are clip-ons available everywhere. Maybe it comes out worse because of the pick on the first play, and it ends up being just the one play.
I don't think that matters at all to me, man. It's just Cam Newton's supposed to have taken the step to be mature, and by and large, he is. But when you're losing, right, to pull something off like that when you're winning, the organization and Rivera might be a little bit more relaxed in his approach to it. But when you're losing on top of everything, you just can't make idiotic moves like that.
I also want to talk on the Boston Pizza fan line, everybody's thoughts on the Jets. Impressive two wins on the road and what you think this team is. But I'm going to tee up the lines, and this just popped into my head. Mark Scheifele's missed two games. He's listed as day-to-day. Tyler Myers was listed as day-to-day. He's now missed 11 games. Yeah. How concerned are you over this Mark Scheifele? He skated both pre-games.
Yeah, which is valid.
Which is different than Tyler Myers.
Both those
or
points
others
are valid, right? The day-to-day thing, you never know. We learned that a couple years ago. You just never know how long that's going to be. But the fact that he's out there skating pre-game should indicate that he's back soon.
Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Anything and everything today on a Monday on The Big Show, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Welcome back to the Big Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Tiger Woods wrapped up his first event in 15 months. What'd you think of it? What are your impressions? Did you enjoy it? Lots of NFL to go. Two curling rinks from Manitoba win the Men's and Women's Canada Cup. Jen Jones, Reed Carruthers, congratulations to them. And, of course, the Jets, they go on the road, get two big road victories. One against St. Louis, 3-2 in overtime Saturday, and then Sunday, 2-1 over the Blackhawks. Mark Scheifele, day-to-day, did skate both days. No word yet as the team is off today if he has a chance of playing against the Detroit Red Wings, whom the team hosts tomorrow night. Anything and everything and all that we just discussed on the Boston Pizza Fan Line today with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, 780-1290. Dave, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
How you doing?
Good. You?
Good, good. How you feeling after those two monster victories?
Well, it's interesting because I was watching them, And then last night I tweeted out, it's fair to say that we may never know what this year's team will be, and I think that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how I feel. Like, I'm like, yeah, what a big weekend for them. But yet I felt that way when they shut out Chicago at home and went out on the road, and then they went 0-5. Like, it's just up and down all year so far.
I know. Who knows what to make of these guys? I mean, they lose a nasty one to Edmonton, and then they go out and kill those two teams in their home rinks. I thought they played even better against St. Louis. That was my feeling. Mm-hmm. But the play of guys like Andrew Kopp, Brandon Tanev takes a page out of Matty Thoreau's book, I think, and just being a tenacious mad dog on the puck, you know? And Brian Little, you know, the return of Brian Little, I think pretty soon the word underrated will not go with Brian Little, you know, if he keeps it up. But it feels good, but like you say, who knows what to expect from these guys, you know?
What do you think of them? Like, are they a playoff team?
I think if they can win 44 games, they are.
And you know what else you think? If they only win 24, they're not.
Yeah, that's right. So it's I can't venture a guess on it. I really, who knows? There could be a marriage between the older guys and the younger guys, and they could find some chemistry. Hellebuck could get hot. Could be great, or they could squander their season around 500 and finish 4 or 6 points back. I think as long as they're in the hunt, it'll be great hockey. As long as they're in the hunt, you know?
Yeah, that's the one thing I do think, Dave. I think it's going to be very interesting as the season goes forward and unravels. And you mentioned a couple names there, and I think this is part of a season that is needed, is to just let these guys have good games, bad games, figure it out. I think it bodes well for the future.
And I'll say this, if Brian Little still, this is his 10th season. If people still like are considering him to be underrated, he ain't ever going to shake that at this point.
And that's not a bad thing for the Jets
either. No, it's not a bad thing at all.
Dave, we appreciate the call. Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Chip, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. I realize, like you say, the Jets have been up and down all year, but I'm really impressed with the weekend. The fact that it was back-to-back nights against tough teams is big for me. I just love the way they stepped up. And with both Hutch and both goalies playing this weekend and both games being back-to-back, and I think the young guys are showing growth on the weekend. And one thing I'm curious about your thoughts on this is big buff there, that penalty in the third period. I feel the referees are way too hard on him. I feel things are called on him that would be let go on other players. Like, is there a target on him for a reason? Is it just because he's big buff? Like,
I think he's just so strong, man. I think he often gets penalties, I think, just because there's such a strength difference with his game.
Oh, like, really, you just watch those replays and you just say, come on, that's not a penalty. And it seems to happen to him more frequently than others.
Yep. Agreed. I agree.
Yeah, I just think the refereeing overall is inconsistent. And I don't know how a better way to say it. I'm not saying it's awful, but I just think night in, night out, it's different players, different, it's inconsistent. And
but
you know,
it's Dustin specifically with Buffalo, man, he gets penalties sometimes simply for being superior in strength to the guy he's up against.
And Patrick Kane draws penalties that not are always penalties because he's so good. Like, it's the old adage of that as well. But yeah, I agree with that. It's not a bad thing to point out, Chip, put it that way. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. It is the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and your calls. Rick, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, boys.
Morning.
I'm looking to the west, and I think I see a storm cloud.
Are you talking weather, or are you talking somehow the Jets?
Oh, no, the Jets. I'm happy.
Oh, okay.
All right. I mean, you can't be a Jet fan and not be encouraged from what we've seen. I mean, this weekend at the very least, but even this season, all things considered, team's playing good. But I guess what I want to say about the Jets mostly today is that whenever someone talks, or you know, we've talked or whatever, about just wondering if the team's going to be, like, if it's going to be Maurice's team moving forward, Well, you know, this weekend goes a long way into saying, yeah, it can be and it maybe should be, because if he can get Buff to play the right way like that, the team's just better all the time. You know, and I think that that's very important. We have to get a little more disciplined with the sticks because, you know, I was inadvertent at the end, but how different would it have been if they would have scored two goals and we lost 3-2 with a man in the box in the last 2 minutes for four, right? I mean, not to be critical, I think the team's really moving forward. And let's, you know, a few teams in the division got games in hand in us, and then so everybody kind of gets a little bit, ooh, we got games in hand. But those aren't wins in hand, right? They're just games in hand. And when you look around the West, whoever said it this morning, I don't see anyone out there that's, you know, like, who are we really scared of? I think Nashville's the best team I've seen in the West, and we can play with everybody. So, you know, Minnesota hasn't sold me on too much yet, because if you look at their schedule, I mean, the schedule maker must work for the Wild. They play, like, no games, and there's always 2 or 3 days between. Like, what's going on?
Well, they will. The schedule for them is coming, and it's coming exactly. For every team.
Exactly.
And like, so it's going to be interesting, yeah.
So I think that we're in good shape. I'm going to say that we make the playoffs, and I think it's only going to take about 90 points to get in, because these teams in the West are pretty even. They're going to beat the heck out of each other. But wow,
yeah, I think Gary Lawless ran some numbers last week, and he figured that it'd be 92 points this year, which is down from previous years.
I think it'll be lower.
Yeah.
I really do. I believe that. And, hey, Patrick Laine, like, do we have something here or what?
Like, yeah, I don't know about this guy. You know, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
You know what? You shaved off your mustache, eh?
Yes, I lost 3 pounds.
I know. The funny thing is, like, I didn't ever want to say, well, you were growing one, but I was growing the same kind, like a big handlebar Fu Manchu.
Yes, Rick.
I haven't shaved it off yet, and everybody's kind of looking at me in the house like I'm not right in the head.
Mo, bro, you keep it, and you tell them that you'll shave it when the Jets are eliminated from postseason action.
So never.
That. Well, maybe. That's up to you, man.
Have a great day, boy.
Hey, thanks for the call, Rick. We appreciate it. Some optimism there for the Winnipeg Jets going forward. 780-1290 on the Boston Pizza fan line, as we're just sort of asking, like, is it wide open? Where do you sit with the Jets? And I gave in on Sunday night. I just said, I don't know. I don't know what to expect from this team night in, night out. But I do know this. It might be okay. It's exciting to watch this team, you know, figure it out. And it's as disappointing as that road trip is if you're a fan. And then you see games like this on the weekend. It's like, and no Mark Scheifele. Like, it's bizarre how the injuries and the guys in the lineup and stuff. Not bizarre, I guess, but just it's fascinating to watch in my mind.
And I say that's the exact mentality that you should have as a fan of the Winnipeg Jets this year. When you're dealing with the amount of youth this team has right now, there can't help but be ups and downs and a little bit of a lack of consistency. What we saw the last couple of games was a remarkable level of play, and boy, if they can sustain this for a while, things could get really interesting. But don't be surprised if they pull or rip the heart out of your chest here in the next 2, 3, 4 games sort of a thing with a remarkable, you know, hit rock bottom sort of thing again, right? It's going to happen when you have this much youth.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, to try and say you know what you have here, and I mean, I think it's clear that you have something good, and it might not pan out this year,
yeah.
But it's clear you have something good. But the fascination for me comes with how it's going to work, who's going to be here, who's not, how it's all going to pan out, and if it does happen this year going forward or not. One of the other things we were talking about today on the big show at the start of the year is what you do with Paul Maurice. And this isn't a negative, like, get on, in my mind anyways, get on and fire Paul Maurice bandwagon. It's just you have this season that you have your ups and downs and the injuries and so much youth, and you're seeing some really good things and some things that aren't working well, and you're sort of moving forward here. But he has 1 year left on his contract next year, and it's just real interesting to me on, you know, what you do with him going forward. Like, is it 2 year extension? Do you give him an extension? Do you not? Do you give him more? Do you, like, how this season plays out? I guess the question is what you do with Paul Maurice heading into next year and his last year of his contract, does it dictate with this season? Like, is there anything that could go on here that you go, whoa, I don't think he deserves an extension? Or is there anything that goes on here that says, you know, he needs one? Like, let's look what he's done.
I think if we would have seen the whoa, he shouldn't get an extension, I think that would have been evident already. And I know some people the call us and have strong feelings. I don't feel that way at all with this young group. They seem to be taking strides, right? Two steps forward, one step back sort of a thing, but moving forward. I think it's inevitable that he gets an extension.
Brandon?
Yeah, I don't think you need to extend him after the season. I really don't. Like, I don't see the harm in letting next year play out and just kind of see where things fall. Unless Barry's...
Such a critical stage of development for the team, though. You want a lame duck coach in such an important season?
Do you want to hand out an extension and the Jets start off the year 5-12 and things are just completely spiraling out of control and then...
I would rather err that way, right? That's not our money to worry about. I'd rather the team err in that way, right? Like, identify your guy. If he's your guy, then extend him. And if he's not, then make a move. But don't. And I don't know so much that I buy into the lame duck understanding. You look at Ken Hitchcock, who wants a one-year deal year in, year out.
I've never bought into that. I know that's how the NHL works, but I've never bought into it. I've never had a problem putting the same pressure on a coach that you do your players. And I understand that the philosophy is, well, the guy in the room, he might coach differently because he's got this pressure. Does he try different things than he wouldn't because he knows he's got to pile up the wins? I just think you need wins every year.
It's more so how the players react to it, not how the coach reacts to it. You want the guys in the room, like if they're looking at their leader, their general.
Yeah,
saying,
there's
like,
that
this
feeling that
us.
If he doesn't have a contract, well, we don't have to basically, we disagree with this and don't have to toe the line because there's a good chance he's not going to be here. All that. I don't mind putting the same pressure on your coach as you do your players with contracts. More of your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jeff, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to go back to something that you guys talked about last week is Laine's shot and that goal that he scored in New Jersey, I think it was, or against New Jersey.
Yep.
I was at the game, and everyone in the stands kind of looked at each other and said, what just happened there? Like, the thing is, it's so fast, but I think also there's so much velocity on it. I remember, Troy, you were talking about it, saying you'd looked at the replay, and you couldn't see that it was deflected. Mm-hmm. But there is one angle that I saw where it's clearly deflected. But the point is, it has so much velocity on it, as well as being a quick release, that even though it hits, I think the defenseman stick, it's in the net before you know it. And I've been talking with hockey fan friends, and apparently Laine will, if he misses a shot that he wants in practice, he takes 100 shots till he gets it. Huh. Like, how lucky are we in Winnipeg that we have this potential superstar? I mean, he's on pace for, like, goals in the high 40s. And every time I watch him play, he looks better. Like the pass that he made to set up Little, I just can't say how excited I am about having Laine. And then all the other young players that the Jets have, like if they can, like it's like we're hitting a critical mass with talented forward. If we can stay healthy, the development curve for the season could be really something to be amazed at.
I like the way you said that, man.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say how excited I am about this team. It's so exciting to watch.
Well, and that's the feeling I got. You know, I went out on Saturday and was watching the game. I usually sit at home and watch it, the road games, but I was out publicly and I was with Hustler and we were just sitting around and the whole place, the establishment where we were, is just, it wasn't about the win. It wasn't about, you know, the injuries or Scheifele not playing. It was all about, like, and it wasn't just about Laine. It was about the... Just that the whole place kept talking. We finally have our superstar. We finally have our superstar. We finally have our, like, you have your Blake Wheelers, yeah, and you have your $6 million players, and you have your Dustin Byfuglien's and your $8 million players. But it just seems like there's this whole fever around that it's a clear upper echelon player that comes along maybe once in a lifetime that people seem to be so excited about. And like I said, I try to stay level headed and see things from all sides. And who knows going forward how good this kid's going to be. But right now, it just seems like everybody's buying into this is your Patrick Kane, your Sidney Crosby, yeah, your Alex Ovechkin. Like, people believe that this is the guy that is a generational player.
There's
it's so
no
exciting.
Question.
Yeah.
So, and that's a lot of pressure too now to live up to and all that to do that. But so far, like it looks so good that it's a game-changing player to get into your organization. Jeff, we appreciate the call, and we'll take more of your calls when we get back on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca.
This is The Big Show Podcast on tsn1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. We're talking Jets, we're talking Tiger, we're talking NFL. Anything and everything today on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, Jim Toth with you. And Andy, you're on The Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Watched the game last night, and when I watched Andrew Kopp's game, I was thinking, on this expansion draft, is it prudent to take four defensemen when three of them are right-hand shooting defensemen, as opposed to taking maybe two more forwards like Kopp and Dano?
Well, the way to look at that in my perspective is you're going to lose a player, and you're only going to lose one player.
Kopp is safe, right? This is a second-year pro?
No.
No? Kopp is not safe.
Yes. Is he not?
No, he's not safe.
Oh, yeah, because he's played his first year. So the way I look at it, Andy, is can you risk to lose a forward or a defenseman on this team? And to me, you don't have the depth on defense to lose a defenseman.
Hey, guys, Kopp isn't safe because he played
one game
in his first year?
Yeah, they gave him that one game.
Holy cripe, how much of
that was that Calgary? That was the Calgary game, too, remember?
But back then,
game of the year where it didn't mean anything because both teams had clinched a playoff spot. Because you didn't know.
But back then, you didn't know expansion was coming.
That's just bad luck. Holy cow.
But yeah, it comes down to this. Would you rather have Tyler Myers or Andrew Kopp on your team?
I totally blame Kopp, actually. He shouldn't have played. I'm just kidding. So that's the way I look at it, Andy, is I don't think this team has the depth on defense, whereas you're going to lose a quality forward, but I think you protect four D-men going forward.
But isn't Myers your third pairing D if he's playing your right side? Because like Trouba and Myers can't be on playing.
I don't know. Like, you tell me. I think if you can keep, you're far better off keeping Morrissey, which you can, Byfuglien, Enstrom, Myers.
And Andy, there's no way in the world you would lose an asset like Tyler Myers. You would trade. If you were ever to set up a situation like that, you would trade him, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But you're going to lose a top forward in my mind, or a top perspective forward. But I think even if it is a Marco Dano or an Adam Lowry or a Matthew Perreault or whatever, at least you have some more depth at that position. I think if you lose one of your defensemen, you're just more depleted than you already are.
Yeah, and Troy put it the best way. Look at it as an asset. Mm-hmm. Don't look at it as third pairing, fourth line, whatever. Which asset is the most valuable? And there's no question whether it's Myers or Trouba. You know, if you were to toss one of those up in the air and assume you wanted to trade one of them, right? Myers or Trouba gets you four Andrew Kopps.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So it's just there really isn't a debate for the Jets. The only debate is which of the final four forwards does the team keep after Shifley, Wheeler, and Little.
And another way to look at it is when a forward goes down, like, who are you picking from? But when Tyler Myers goes down, who are you picking from? Like, to me, that's just me, Andy. I don't know what you think. But so you're thinking, you know, rather keep Kopp than risk losing him and expose a D-man?
There's no debate to be had there.
We appreciate it, Andy. We'll get to more of your calls. Ron and Ralph, please hang on. We'll get to more on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is The Big Show Podcast on tsn1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. We're talking Jets. We're talking How much does this season and what happens influences what you would do with Paul Maurice as he heads into his final year of his contract next season? And also Tiger Woods, what are your impressions? Is he back? Do you have a good feeling about it? Do you not? NFL and a whole bunch of other stuff on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290, anything and everything with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki once again. Ron, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Now, I was going to call and talk about one particular player that no one's mentioned yet today, but first of all, I would sign Maurice for sure. Like he's got so much talent to work with now that he, you know, when he first came, it was all different for them. He's got that, the young guys. I believe that Maurice is the guy that you need to go forward with. There's been a lot of talk about it. I know a friend of mine who just keeps on telling me that they should go a different way with the coaching, and I'm saying no, no, no. So I'm all for Maurice signing an extension. Either it happened this year or next year, I don't know how that's going to work. And so the player I want to talk about is Josh Morrissey and how what this guy has done. And like a lot of people were wondering about Josh, and like last year he had a terrible year, and it, with the Moose, it wasn't very good. And I think he even got injured in that year. At the end
of the year, he did. Yeah, I wouldn't say it was a terrible year, Ron. What I would say is it got off to a poor start, and then after about 20-25 games, it slowly got better, and he was rounding out. And then at the end of the year, he got hurt, missed the last. In fact, with the injuries the Jets had, if he wasn't injured, he probably would have got more time in the NHL last year, but of his injury.
Right. And, you know, it's funny, we got so much talent on this team now, and the young guys that are coming up, and we could talk about so many different players like Laine and then Little coming back, and I know he's not one of the young guys, but, man, that guy, what an add that has been since he's come back from his injury. He's been unbelievable. But I just going back to Josh, the guy doesn't panic when he goes back there. He gets pressure on him. He digs the puck out. He protects the puck from a player that's on him. He makes smart passes. He covers up for Buff whenever Buff is like, you know what Buff does, and we all know what he does. But I think Josh knows that, and he understands that. And he's been unbelievable. The games this weekend that the Jets played in, that was solid road hockey. Really enjoyed that. So that's all I had to say. Josh Morrissey, he's the real deal. He's not going back to the AHL, that's for sure. Take care.
Thanks, Ron. We appreciate the call on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
It's real interesting you brought that up, Ron. We speak to Shane Knighty tomorrow, and I can't wait to talk to him specifically about Josh Morrissey. I'm right there with you, man. How calm he is and composed, the use of his body and positioning is mind-blowing to me. He looks absolutely like he's a 4 or 5 year veteran out there.
And to me, part of the adjustment, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, and I've seen that, it started with that 5-game road trip. Teams now know him a bit, have video on him and how they approach him, try to be more physical, and he's handling it all well. Like, it's you know, he's still got some things to learn, and he's taken some penalties, but there's nothing that I've seen so far, even with the more emphasis focused on him and trying to be more physical with him, that doesn't tell me that it's not going to go in a positive direction for him in my mind. Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. And Ralph, welcome to The Big Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
One of the things you need in a winning hockey team is a good goalie, a guy that can stop the puck. And I think if we make the playoffs, you extend Mr. Morris's contract. Also, Mr. Kane yesterday, he took a dive, or they call it an embellishment now, on Buff there. But one of the things that really impressed me was Mr. Lowry's punishing hits. When you get hit like that, you don't forget it. Also, the reason Mr. Morrissey is such a good player, he came from a good league. It's called the Prince Albert Raiders. I played for the Mentos. I know all about Saskatchewan. How about that?
I believe. Is that it, Ralph? We appreciate the call on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Adam Lowry had a great game yesterday. That whole line had a great game. Kopp and Dano along line. Mark O'Donnell's back check, I think it was in the second period to strip the puck, or the third period there. I thought they were the best line of the game. And when you say that, it's like pointing out maybe other lines weren't as good. I'm not saying that. I just thought they stood out amongst a pretty good overall game from the Jets lineup.
Mark O'Donnell's the real deal. He was the real deal when he arrived here. Anyone that would listen in the offseason, I always thought he was one of the most underrated, undervalued guys on the roster. And you just watch him out there, man. He's tenacious. He's like a fire hydrant out there. The size, sort of the tenacity, the mindset of Kopp, Lowry, and Dano is spectacular.
It's basically the fourth line. Remember when people went crazy for GST the first year here? Mm-hmm. Because they would just hit everyone and the fans would go crazy. But you look at what they did on the ice, like kind of looking back on it, and the impact they had was very minimal and probably negative overall for the team. I think this line is what people thought the GST line was. Like, this line can actually contribute, and they're playing as a third line right now. And depending on how Paul Maurice wants to tinker with his lineup, there's a very, very real chance that this could be your fourth line when everybody's healthy. Uh-huh. And that's a serious weapon right there. Yeah. Because there, I would like someone to show me a fourth line that could go up against those three and come out on top. Because the way they're playing right now, they're shutting down a lot of other teams' real strong players, and they're doing it, like, it's not just a percentages thing. Like, they're doing it, and it seems very, very sustainable.
And since arriving in Winnipeg, Dano, a strong possession player, and averages 0.4 points a game. So if you're talking fourth line, Wicks, and the Jets have never had production from a fourth line, even from a third line, a 0.4 points a game guy is gold.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I know a lot of people talk about Adam Lowry and tweet about him and say, you know, why they love him so much. Well, this is why they do. They're trying to give him enough leeway and rope to sort of develop into this big, tough, physical, hard to play against, agitative, I would say, centerman, that whether he's third or fourth, and that's the thing you can debate all you want, but that's what they're sort of letting him develop into. Is you see pockets of it. Like, it's just, I'm the first to admit it's not there yet, night in, night out, consistent. But you see pockets of what they want him to become.
And on both sides of him, when you got Kopp and Dano, you've got a similar type mentality out there. Like, go hit Dano, see what happens to you. Right? Kopp will bring it, like, right across the line there. It's a very intriguing line.
And Kopp on the wing, like, I mean, if you can have that line and have two centermen that can take faceoffs, and then if Kopp can start scoring, like, they specifically sent him down at the start of camp to give him more offensive opportunities to provide some offense. And he's been dangerous. Even on nights he's not scoring, I think he's created a lot of stuff offensively that maybe last year when he's on the fourth line and just being that grinding out face-off guy.
We're seeing a different part of his aspect of his game this year. Huh?
Yeah, I would think so.
Anytime he gets open and gets his shot off, it's a legitimate chance to go in the net. And that, I mean, that was not there last year. I think he had the one beauty dangle against, I can't remember the team in Winnipeg, but he didn't have that same shot last year. It's something he's clearly worked on. And when you're beating goalies in the NHL cleanly, when they get a clean sight at it and they still can't pick it up quick enough, there's not a lot of players that can do that. Even some of the best players, he's got a real, real strong release. It's just how often is he going to be able to get in the open to use it?
And I can't remember which part of this season it was or which pregame, but I do remember listening to the pregame show here with Rick Ralph on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, and they, you know, every player say, what are you working on? Most of them say, well, my skating or my physicality, whatever. And he specifically mentioned his shot. He goes, I know the team wants me to be more offensive, so I spent a lot of time this offseason working on my shot. And you can clearly see it's come a little, you can see the difference in it. It's developing in my mind. So it's interesting. Now, Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Thanks, Ralph, for the call. And we'll take more of your calls. We're talking Jets. We're talking Tiger Woods. Talking NFL and Cam Newton. And also Mr. Paul Maurice. Like, how much or what do you need to see from this season? And will that influence you going forward with the head coach? And this isn't a negative, you know, he doesn't deserve things. It can be if that's what you think. If you think, and there is that leanings of some people that say, you know, maybe they should make a coaching change. I'm just wondering, this roster alone, and given the timeliness of him having 1 year left, how much influence this season has on what you do with Paul Maurice. Bots and Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. More of your calls when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support United Way's Coats for Kids. Coats for Kids has been a Winnipeg institution since 1989. Every year from October to February, the program distributes winter outerwear to families in need. For some children, having a warm coat means attending school on a cold day instead of staying at home. Donations can be dropped off at any Winnipeg Fire Paramedic Service Station or Perth's Dry Cleaners. Full details are online right now at TSN1290.ca. The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and your calls on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. It is wide open right now in case you would like to weigh in on some of the things we're talking about. And some of the things we are talking about is how much influence does what happened with the Jets roster this season affect what you do with Paul Maurice as you head into next year. And I sort of had this train of thought when a discussion broke out Saturday night, just how do we know Paul Maurice is a good coach? And we've been taking calls on that, and I was discussing it, and I said, well, he's done some good things with some poor rosters. He's maximized, I think, getting out of some weaker rosters the most potential. His record is just above or around 500, and I'm just wondering, basically the consensus we had after about a half hour discussion is he's not a bad coach at all by any means. He's not probably a great upper echelon coach that's won Stanley Cup championships, but he just basically he's a good coach. And so what do you do with him going into next year? Like, how long do you extend him? If you extend him, do you not? Like, how much influence would this? I mean, clearly if this team gets in the playoffs, I think that that's a pretty clear indication that you need to extend him despite him having 1 year left. But if they don't get in the playoffs, or is there anything that you don't like? It's interesting to me, for nothing that Paul Maurice has done or not done, the situation that his contract situation is in, given this roster and what they're doing. Some nights look so good. Some nights you can't figure him out. Other nights, you know, there's so many injuries. How do you know? It's just interesting that his last season of his contract is coming up with this team being the way they are right now. Does it influence it at all?
Yeah, and I don't think, like, to me, it's not like the Claude Noel days where some days I watch this team and I go, what in the hell is going on? Where there seems to be a lack of investment or give an F factor. Remember that being used by somebody within the organization, a concern for a lack of give an F factor. I don't see that here with these guys. So to me, it's a slam dunk, in my opinion, that he's going to get an extension. I think you could give it to him right now. The one thing that concerns me a little bit with Paul Maurice is special teams. Mm-hmm. And that's something like they're 24th in the penalty kill, 17th in the power play. Boy, for them to become a consistent playoff team, that's going to have to improve. I know that it's one of those things sort of that have attached itself to Paul Maurice, where that's an area that he typically hasn't been overly successful with. Some of that might have to do with a lack of upper-end talent. Maybe with other teams, you hope specifically the power play here can continue to morph it and get considerably better. But I think it's a slam dunk he gets an extension. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, I don't think special teams – I don't think you need the top-end guys to have a decent special teams team.
Fair.
Right? I look at teams like Carolina, who has the number one PK, top 10 power play. New Jersey for years has
Chicago
had a good
has
power
the worst
play.
PK right,
right
now.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one of John Quenneville's biggest faults, too, right? I mean, I guess you kind of live with being an elite 5-on-5 team with so special teams. But yeah, I don't get why this team's penalty kill just couldn't mirror what they did a few years ago. And like, I know Michael Frolik was a big part of that. But you can't tell me that they kill penalties the same way they did a few years ago.
No.
The aggressiveness is just completely gone.
Well, and that was the other part of the discussion I was having on Saturday was they said the discipline and the now amount of penalties this team takes. And it was, you know, Husser made the point, like, isn't that on the head coach?
Mm-hmm. Well, and
to, again,
to
this
that...
wasn't a bashing Paul Maurice. It was a legitimate discussion of, like, so how do you describe him and what is he? And then he brought up the good point of the discipline on this team for 2+ years now has cost them immensely because their penalty kill hasn't been as good as it used to be. So at what point is that on the head coach to sort of fix
that? On. It's on.
And to that point, when Claude Noel was the coach, the Jets were among the least disciplined teams in the NHL. Like he had essentially the same core group of players, yet they went basically from worst to first. Like and it could be stamped out. And to me, it's not a, well, they weren't checking hard under Claude Noel, that's why they didn't take penalties. Because go right now and look at the top 10 teams, or the teams in the bottom 10 of penalty minutes, and you'll see Chicago, Minnesota, a bunch of these teams that clearly have strong defensive units and check you hard and play hard, yet they find a way to take about 20 less penalties than the Jets have so far this season.
Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show. Lewis, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, fellas. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
So, I was just listening to you guys talk about Paul Maurice, and I got to agree with Troy there. I think it's a slam dunk. I think that he's steady. I think that the players seem to love him. And this is, quite frankly, the first time in Jets history, really, that we've had a team that could be competitive. And he hasn't just had a pile of, third, fourth liners to deal with. So I say give the guy a chance, see what he can do. You know, he's been doing pretty well already, and he's got a pretty good track record. And I guess the final thing is, like, who are you going to pick? You know, who else would you replace him with? There's no Mike Sullivans out there that are just going to take the team halfway through the season and lead them to a Stanley Cup.
Well, there's some pretty good coaches available. And my discussion I was having on Saturday, one threw out the name Ralph Kruger. Like there are some coaches out there that are good, and it's just, and that's what it was. Again, this wasn't a bash in Paul Maurice. It was just like trying to figure out, where he sits amongst the coaches. And
well, for sure, and like there for sure are good coaches out there, like Ralph Kruger. But my question is kind of like, it's like when people were saying, well, why don't you trade Trouba for for another right-hand shot D-man. Well, who's going to take someone that they know is good and trade him for a guy that they're not sure will fit in, right? Maurice, we know is good. We know that he fits super well with the team. And now that he's finally got a chance, they've put together what could be a very successful team. Why would they get rid of everything he's built and just try somebody else real quick?
And you're right, Lewis, about the players, because as much as we probably hate to admit it, because none of us can pick or choose our bosses, not that I dislike mine at all. I love my boss. You guys? it is an industry where you don't have to like the guy you play for, but you have to feel like he knows what he's doing, respect him, and have you going in a right direction. And I think not only do the Jets players have that for Maurice, but they also generally like him. And like, if Paul Maurice, his tenure eventually could be years from now, could not ends with the Jets, he's still a very good coach in my mind. Like, when you talk hockey with Paul Maurice, he knows what he's talking about. It just sometimes those don't work out or whatever, but it's not like he's a guy who has these wild philosophies and stuff. He studies the game, he learns the game, he's continuously evolving around the game.
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's what I was saying. Like, he's steady. He's not some wild, crazy coach who just lucked into how many hundreds of wins,
Yeah, I think he's a damn good coach. He's got a great relationship with the players, by all accounts. I think he's the guy.
Yeah, well, and look at Wheeler. Wheeler plays center this, last two games. They light it up. And then he goes and he's talking about, whatever. That's just kind of what I do. Well, what kind of coach do you have to be to get somebody to buy into doing that kind of stuff,
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's... like I said, it wasn't a conversation sort of like, it just was a conversation that came up is how would you say you know that he's a good coach? And I would say, well, his record, and you look at some of the teams he's taken that maybe you got more out of them than you expected. And then the conversation rolled around to this year. Well, like, how do you grade this year? Because he's only got 1 year left. And how much does what happens this year influence? Like, if he gets them into the playoffs, I think it's more than fair to say more out of them than you expected.
Yep.
So then, but if he doesn't, do you hold that against him, or do you, like, just what do you do? It's interesting. Lewis, we've got to get to more calls, but we appreciate yours and brought up some good points. Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Barry, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hello, yes. I'm absolutely 100% sure they'll re-sign him.
Okay.
And my question is, where do you think Winnipeg would be right now if they didn't have him as a coach?
Well, that's a tough question to ask, because then you have to tell me who would be here. And then,
well, this is true. But look what he's done with the injury and what has happened to Winnipeg since day one. And you know what? With this family organization and the good feel in the locker room, I think Paul Maurice is your guy.
Well, and it's interesting because I asked him after, I believe, I forget, it was a Sunday afternoon game this year, and I just said, you know, the team has changed so much in the style from when you went to the playoffs 2 years ago. Like, are you surprised how quick of an evolution it's been? And he looked at me dead in the eye and he said, well, don't forget last year. And i.e., like, last year was 3 years in my life with what they went through and the struggles and all that to get to where they are today. And I think that they, you know, he was basically saying without saying, we paid a price last year with the struggles and the season and everything overall, everything we went through to get to this point with the young players and all we have. So, like, although it's been a quick change from the Anaheim playoff series to where they are today, but last year, well, it was only 1 year, but in his mind was like three of with what they went through. So that was interesting. We'll tee up more of this and take more of your calls tomorrow. We'll maybe continue the conversation on Mr. Paul Maurice as well as we get ready for the Detroit Red Wings and the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow night right here on TSN 1290. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening to The Big Show, and we'll be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca.
This is The Big Show Podcast on tsn1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.